All right. Everybody who is signed on, welcome. And we'll start with a prayer. Anybody who wants to offer that?
I'll offer it for you. Our Father in Heaven, we approach thee this morning as we begin this Deer Springs Ranch Owners Association Board meeting, and we ask that thy spirit will attend us, that we will be able to discuss the budget and other matters that come up in a civil and great manner in which we will all get along and there will be no hard feelings, that we will be able to be guided and directed in our approach and the things that we need to accomplish. We ask these things, Father, in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you, Scott. All right, now we're going to do a roll call and talk slow. Mention your lot number. And it's all on Scott now. So I'm Brent Fulmer, lot 117.
All right. We'll start with you, Brent, and the rest of the board members, and we can go from there.
Michael Jorison, lot 67.
Adolf, 83-280.
Larry Clark, 276.
Bart Batista, 94.
Kevin Poole, 64.
Okay, members.
Dan Wirt, 28 plus.
Karen Fry, lot 13. Sherry Tobler, 23. Kathy Pierce, 23-24.
Brian Castle, 130.
Deb and Tina Collins, 121.
Vance Green, 156.
Joe Bose, 107.
Don't be shy. Unmute if you can. And all right, I guess nobody else wants to.
Okay. All right.
I guess we'll see who's on. Who didn't write it down. So go ahead, Brent.
Well, anyway.
Is it still on me? You want me to do the minutes now?
Yeah, well, I was going to talk about Zoom participation here real quick.
Okay.
I'm as frustrated with Zoom as everyone else is. And my connection might not be what it usually is because Zoom wouldn't let me Zoom. Anyway. Long story short, take your time, state what you're going to state, give Scott time to write it down, and be nice. So anyway, Scott, if you want to go with the October minutes.
All right. I sent out to the board the minutes for last meeting of October, I think 12th, 2023, and I did not come back with anybody, any corrections or anything that should be added. So I propose that we accept the meetings as I sent them out. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, thank you. Any opposed? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, thank you.
Is that all you have, Scott?
Yes. At this time.
All right. Okay. All right. Michael, the floor or screen or however you want to consider it is yours.
Hot seat. all right. Let's have some fun. Let's talk numbers. Share my screen. That screen's fine. Going to totally ignore the elephant in the room, so we'll just get to that as we go down the list. And I'm just going to start at the top and kind of discuss down the list, and I will stop at each heading. So like category, you know, each category, I'll stop at each one for questions. I'm not going to stop at each line item for questions. So let's get going. Assessments are just what they are. You know, that's unless we increase them, that's what it's going to be. Bank interest income. I expect. Of course, now I can't speak. Bank interest income, I expect, will be in the thousands next year, but that is all due to the reserve funds being moved to CDs. And that is not, or at least I don't feel that's income that we would put in the general budget. That's income that goes right back into the CDs, right back into the reserve fund, to continue to grow that fund the best we can. A little bit of research into reserve funds. Many sites suggest that HOAs have 70 to 100% of their annual budget in reserve. We have about a quarter, maybe a little more. So we need to continue to grow that the best we can. The cabins, and I don't know if you can see off to the right-hand side. I've got bull sheets up. If somebody can't see these numbers, I can make them a little bigger. Let me know if I need to do that. Building and facility rental income is basically the cabins. That all rolls up. We came pretty close to the 26,000 last year, 25,570. So I left that as is. Donations. This is the annual meeting. In the past, that's been rolled up into the budget. I took last year's annual meeting total dollars and moved it into a CD, 12-month CD, so that it can be opened each year, pay the next year's stuff, and then reopen the CD with the new donations for the annual meeting. This keeps that money totally separate from our regular budget. And, you know, we can grow that fund and maybe build a pavilion or whatever else fully funded by the donations from the annual meeting. Finance charges. Expect that to go up a little based upon financing. livestock income is pretty set. Member services, you know, all of this is just kind of brought over from the other sheet. I expect these two are going to change because we do have some water issues we have to deal with in the coming year. So they may change, but right now they're staying as they were last year, or what we collected last year. Miscellaneous income, based upon, you know, what was on the right-hand side. Reimbursed expenses and wildlife income. Wildlife income went way down due to the number of deer permits and no elk permits. And Larry, correct me if I'm speaking out of incorrectly. This may be more than that in the coming year. But we wanted to be, you know, conservative, not aggressive, which leaves us about $209,000 for a budget for 2024.
Michael, this is Kathy.
Yes.
A question on your transfer fees. Where is that in your income category?
Transfer fees for what?
That's every purchase on a lot. They're charging $100 for a transfer fee. Would that be included in your budget on income?
Probably in the miscellaneous category. I do not know where that's being put currently, but that would be my guess.
And I think it's actually $150 right now, Kathy.
Okay.
It's $100.
That's what I thought.
Is it 100? Okay. I thought it was 150 last time.
100. Yeah. Okay.
So there isn't a specific line item for it? No. I think that's probably rolls up under miscellaneous.
Would there be a chance to break that down? It'd be kind of nice to know if, you know, as far as new members and stuff like that, to make that a line item. I mean, in the future.
I understand. No, that's why I put it there, and as a reminder for me to go look it up.
Okay. So, all right. Super. Okay. Thank you.
Good suggestion.
Well, so just one quick comment on transfer fees, and I don't want to get derailed on this, but legally to be able to charge that, we actually have to have a recorded notice on all of the lots in order to be able to charge that, which we don't currently do. So that's probably another discussion. I agree with Kathy that if we are going to charge it, it needs to be a line item on there, but actually charging it is a totally different question too.
Not for the budget meeting. But yes, thank you. Bring it up later. No. All right. Any other comments or questions on income? Great. These next few are going to go quick. Last year, we didn't put anything aside for agricultural because we put a whole bunch of money into roads, culverts, that type of thing. We kind of took a lot of money out of the agricultural to fund that. This year we've put some back in with various things that we think potentially may come up. This is a big increase. Last year it was $3,600 or something for fish. I'd have to go find it, but anyway, it was $3,600 for fish. I expect it to go up again this year, which is why it's set at $4,000. Nothing else out there. This was a one-time fee to do the fencing. So that really can be removed, but I left it there for history's sake. Any questions on agriculture, livestock, and wildlife?
This is Dan Wirt here. Can you hear me?
Yes, Dan.
Is $2,000 enough for fencing to keep the cows out of the ponds?
Unknown at this time. And probably not. But
right.
It is.
So then it becomes a question of priorities. Should some be taken away from the other categories to increase fencing?
Potentially, yes. So that would be a commitment that we would need to make to get that done this coming year.
Hey, Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought Kurt did say that 2000, he felt like that was enough to handle that fencing to keep them out of the ponds and away from the tank.
It was a good starting point, yes. But whether it's enough, I don't know the answer to that.
Officially 100%, yeah. But yeah. Kurt did seem to feel like that was a good start, like Michael's saying. We did bring that up as a topic or subject. I think that is one of the things that was on his plan, Dan.
And we may not have any brush hogging that we're going to do as a ranch this year. and that could be directed or the budget adjusted to put that towards the fencing. So there are some other places, Dan, that we may be able to pull money if this goes over. But that is exactly what that was set aside for, was the west side of the wet meadow to try and fence that off to keep them out of the ponds.
And also, what does crop management mean? What does that mean?
All right, so we've had lots of discussions over the past year about water and shoring up some of our way to secure water. And one of those methods was to recreate some of the ditches and waterways that would flood irrigate. If those are in place, we can go back to the governing body and say, you know, everything's here to water this area. We can't control what Mother Nature does. So that's part of that crop management erosion control, is to recreate some of those flood irrigation ditches to water areas to protect our water rights.
Okay.
Any other questions? All right, we'll go quickly through these. Auto expenses is just, it is what it is. That's about what we spent last year, left it the same. Bank fees, this is an expense, but we recoup some of those bank fees in income. The two don't wash completely because we pay bank fees in the normal course of business, but any credit card transaction fees are passed back onto the member, and that's part of the income line item that we recoup that.
Michael, Jeff Collins, lot 121. So on the bank fees thing, when you look at the one on your right over here, I think it says does something else like $85, but budget was $1,000. So is this $100?
So
just a mistake. What?
I understand. So this is what was budgeted. This is what was actually spent. But don't get hung up entirely on where it is, because this is also bank fees and finance charges, and this is bank service charges. They're really one and the same. And next year, I'm going to try and clean some of this up. You know, I inherited it. It got put where it got put. But this is what this is the bank fees, bank charges. You know, this may be, and Danielle may know right offhand without looking it up. Come on, stop it. This may be the actual fees for the checking account, and this may be the credit card fees that we pay and also put back on those using a credit card.
Gotcha. So just to clarify real quick, bank fees and finance charges, that can be a fee from the bank or it can be a fee from the vendor, a finance charge. So I believe there was one payment to Garcane earlier in the year that was a mistake with auto pay, but it was a finance charge on our vendor bill with Garcane. So those are finance charges, bank fees. The bank service charge is the service charge we pay for our credit card processing.
Okay. Thank you, Danielle, for the clarification. Any other questions on auto expense or bank fees?
Well, just so go back to that, you're lumping both of those fees together into the $2,000 budgeted item. Is that what
correct? Correct.
But realistically, it's only been about $100 for the, because the bank service charges should write itself off, right? Or charge back to the customer?
Yes, but we're going to overinflate our income because we get this back. So we have to say it's an expense and we show it in the income.
Gotcha.
Okay. So they wash. Otherwise, we're going to get to the bottom and think we have more money than we have.
Totally understood.
All right. Buildings and facilities. You know, we had a big chunk for furnishings and other things because of the cabin remodels for 9 and 10. I took that right out. We have we have some big expenses coming this year, and that was a quick place to reduce our expenses. The $7,000 is for both upper and lower cabin maintenance, so $3,500 each. That is truly just maintenance mode, you know, keeping them going and doing the best we can. Now, there are some issues with a couple of cabins that we may need to address, but at this point, that's kind of how that's set. Propane is just what it is. That's what we spent last year.
Michael, a question on the propane. I know you said you didn't want to break each line item, but on the propane and the cabins maintenance, I'm just a little concerned about these figures because, you know, we've gone in and spent all this money on renovating all these cabins. They shouldn't have that much maintenance is what I'm thinking. And then I really have a question on this propane because that's quite a bit higher. And I know that with the remodels, except for cabin 7, they've gone and taken the wood stoves out, and they're using propane. And to me, that is just causing more expense that we really don't need. And is there a breakdown that Brent, or not Brent, but that Kurt has done that we talked about several times of making a line list of each usage? How many gallons is the cabins using, and how many gallons is the RV using? Is there a breakdown on that so we can see where this money's going?
I do not have a breakdown, and I don't know if they invoice us that way. If they do, we can break it down into the expense of the cabins. As you can see, we do have – this will start breaking down the expenses for each cabin when we have it. But I don't know that they invoice us that way.
Go ahead.
This is Danielle. They sometime this year they did create codes for each cabin. It used to just be a lump sum, and so on this a couple of the latest ones, and especially this last one, which was about $3,000. We do have that broken down per cabin now that as of July we have broken out each cabin individually. So going forward we can see how much propane is being filled per cabin.
Are they doing that with the RV too? The RV park pad?
I have not seen any propane delivered to the RVs.
No, they're taking their bottles and filling up. So we're, as members, are paying for the RV pads being used.
I have not seen that. I will have to. We will have to inquire.
Are those being filled out of the headquarters tank or some other tank?
Headquarters.
They're being taken down to the headquarters and filled there. I brought this up several meetings ago, and it just never got addressed. And I just felt like the members need to know that they're paying for the RV pads at park to be used by, you know, the people that are staying there, whether they're campers or work campers.
Well, I don't think.
This is Kevin.
Go ahead, Kevin.
This is Kevin, Lot 64. I would like to address some of these things. First of all of the cabins are currently closed except for what the garden cabin 7 and 8. 7 and 8 both have wood burning stoves in them. The garden cabin has wood burning stove in it. All the uppers are closed, and 9 and 10, 9 has a propane heater, but it's not being used. 10 does not have heat at all, and 6 has a propane heater that is not being used. So I don't think your usage is going to be coming from the cabins. Currently, there are absolutely no one on the RV lot, so you'll have zero usage there. I think what we will probably find with the propane difference from last year is going to be probably 9 and 10 during renovations and working in there. We had the worst winter ever. So speaking as a person burning propane in cabin 10, trying to keep the job moving, I know I certainly use some. I imagine Nick and Jen Williams use some. as far as where the propane for the RV pads does come from, is being pumped from headquarters. That is true. I don't know that there's a way to track that accurately. So, I mean, I have no clue. And if there's a question of value on the RV pads, as a work camper, I averaged about 30-plus hours a week. If you break that down by Michael's number of $15 an hour, that's $9,000 that the ranch benefited from my presence alone. I have no way to calculate the value of Nan and Scott, the most recent work campers. All of the volunteer hours that Cindy Olson put in, I think the value of the RV pads, if we look at that from a realistic perspective, you will find that it has been a bonus and not a negative. Thank you.
Okay. Dan Word here, 28 plus. I was going to say, shouldn't we be paying for the propane for work campers anyway?
Yes, it's a benefit provided. Yes.
That is a job that is being filled to do Kurt's work. He's hired them, but that would say that Kurt should be paying for that is the way I look at it. But where there's such an increase, I thought that this would be a line item that we really needed to discuss.
Yeah, can I break in real quick?
Please.
This is Vance 156. So over time, the propane to the work campers thing just got slid in. It was never intended to be that way. We exactly. need to codify it and make it real. And as far as keeping track of it, I buy lots of propane, 5 gallons at a time for work down here. I don't know if our dispenser tank has a register on it, but you can. The ones I've always filled from, they have a gallon meter on it. Now, Brett, do you know if our propane tank has a gallon meter on it?
Yes, but it's broken.
Oh, well, let's get it fixed. Simple answer. And let's find out what's going out of there for God only knows what.
So I have filled 2 propane bottles and paid Danielle for them off of that tank. And the little bottles really are about 4.7 gallons. Well, we've been charging 5 gallons for the little bottles, which gives us a little bit more for the convenience of having to go down there and fill it up. I don't know how the propane is delivered up to the work campers. Has there been a line run, or is it...
Sounds like they haul their bottles down, Michael.
Haul the bottles down. I don't know. That's going to be a question. I don't know if Kurt's on how we're tracking that, because I don't have that answer.
Well, you could do a couple things. I mean, at least one thing to get it, start tracking outbound bottle usage. You can ask our supplier about a new register, used or otherwise, and if it's cost prohibitive, then forget about it. But you know, we're just sort of ignoring the whole thing right now.
I agree. Understand.
But again, are we officially quote supplying gas for now until eternity to the work campers? Because that was never part of the deal with putting those spots in.
No, it was not.
Like I say, if you decide to do it, make a motion and vote on it. Let's get it on. Let's get it done.
Understand.
But then you've got to track it at some point, because it may be way more. I don't know what it costs delivered out there, but I'm thinking by the time it gets delivered, et cetera, we're looking at close to $5 a gallon.
Yes. Agreed.
So somebody can stop off at, see, we're with Garcane now, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we could ask them or email them or just stop off at their depot and say, hey, we got an XYZ register, take pictures, get the serial number, get the nameplate, and say, how much trouble is it to fix this thing?
Understand. All right. So that's on buildings and facilities. We'll look into that. Landfill, laundry is what it is. Supplies and consumables, you know, they are what they are. Can we cut some costs there? Maybe. And it may cost more depending on value of things going up. Having to purchase things, especially the supplies and consumables, laundry detergent, whatever. Those, we all feel it when we go to the store. Headquarters, mostly everything was just left as it was. I cut the tools way back. If we have a big tool purchase that needs to happen for the ranch itself, we'll address that when it comes. Headquarter utility expenses, based upon what was assigned to it, it was cut almost in half. That's just going off of the budget sheet and what was there. Any questions on headquarters? All right, light and heavy truck maintenance just came across as it was. I think we went over on one, and we went way over on heavy equipment. That was basically the repair on the grader, $5,000-$7,000, whatever it was. We haven't spent anything thus far on light equipment, or at least nothing's been assigned to it. So those were left as they were. And the big one, fuel expenses. With the increase in fuel, we spend a lot of money. I think we have about 1,000 gallons of each currently, based upon what we just purchased. That should get us through the winter without any trouble and not have to worry about trying to bring a big heavy truck down muddy roads. All right, any question on equipment and fuel? All right. These two are broken out. Before they were a single line item. This is what we spend for our QuickBooks application every year. And this is what we spend for storage every year, for records and other things that we need to keep in storage. Again, annual meeting, I took this out of the income, and I also took it out of the expenses so that we weren't showing it twice.
Michael, just real quick, back on the QuickBooks, I thought Danielle was going to take an action to see if we could reduce that fee.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with the current budget.
I'll make a quick comment. I did look at the plans downgrading. The only big thing that we would give up if we downgraded is the ability to do batch invoicing, which can be kind of huge, especially at annual dues where we're creating 300-plus invoices. Being able to do those as a batch rather than individually. So that's my only hesitation now in looking at reducing that.
Yeah, batch invoicing is, you manually sitting down and entering 300 invoices is very time consuming. And Cade, quite frankly, if we end up...
Last one, we're fine. Understood. Okay.
To address some of your email things that I'm just going to skip over the top high 10,000 foot level, is this is going to go up if we have to start dealing with payroll taxes.
Understood.
So it's not going down anytime soon, I don't think. All right. Annual meeting.
Dan Wirt here, 28. Storage. Who are we getting storage from?
It's Kaibab Storage out on the highway close to the Straws gas station in Canam.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Annual meeting, pulled that out. We discussed that above. And the rest of this is basically brought over from, you know, our expenditures plus what we thought might come up. You know, this one, so far, I've been doing everything for free. As time allows, I got nothing done on the website this month because most of my energy has been geared towards budget and our reserve funds. All right. Any more questions on general administration? Great.
And Michael, this is Larry.
Yeah.
What is our telephone expense, $1,900? Don't we have multiple cell phones?
Yeah, there are three, I believe. Is that correct, Daniel? There are three. You have one. Cindy Olson has one, and Kurt has one.
Right now, we're paying $20 for cabins. That's because Cindy had a phone and a number she was using, and just a very low cost. And then we pay about $85 a month for my phone and an extra data plan for the ranch phone that Kurt has.
Okay, I just wanted to understand what the telephone meant. You know, we do not have any type of a landline in the ranch house anymore, or is that?
No, we do.
But does it run through the internet?
Hang on one second. I have a speaker that somebody connected their Bluetooth to. Sorry. yes, there is a landline. Danielle, does that go in this category?
I would assume so. I just know that I pay AT&T, whether that's the landline that's been installed, and we pay for, I'm not sure how that works. But I know that we don't pay any other company for it other than AT&T.
Larry, were you thinking that with the advent of Starlink, that was now coming through Starlink or something rather than a landline?
I just didn't understand if that's if we were running through the Starlink or how does the ranch headquarters phone operate? Is it still cellular? Is it going through Starlink?
Larry, it's Vance. You want me to give you the lowdown on that?
Yeah, if you can do it real quick.
When I got the backhaul to South Central in Kanab for the ranch network, it came with a phone line, and you couldn't not have it. It's a FCC requirement. So back then, which was about 4 years ago, I don't remember who all was on the board. I said, so it comes with this phone number that I'm not going to personally use. I said, that was Barry that I had the conversation with, and then the rest of the board. I said, would you guys like to have a landline, an actual honest-to-God phone at the ranch headquarters? And Barry said, sure. I said, okay, well, let's try it for several months, see if it works out for you, and I won't charge you for it. And at that point, we'll talk about what South Central is charging me for it, even though I'm not using and I can't get rid of it. So we ran it. It worked good. Everybody decided to go ahead and pay for it. It's $55 a month to have the landline at HQ. I'll just cop to it. I get paid for that personally because I'm paying for the ranch network backhaul and all of that data out of my own pocket. So that's the short version on that. Can it be moved to Starlink? Probably not, because it came with a South Central through their network. So that's the kind of wordy version of what's going on there. It is an actual VoIP, not over a crappy satellite of any kind phone. Like if you bought South Central and had it at your house, you'd have the same thing.
Sorry, Dan. Apparently, I can't have more meeting Saturday morning because my brain isn't working. I totally was, yeah, the $55 that we pay to you for that phone. So my bad.
And I'm just passing that expense along to you guys. You know, that was what we talked about. It hasn't changed. I have a really good relationship with South Central. They're not likely to raise rates on me or anything. We talk on a regular basis. So,
Vance, does that come with 911 service as well?
Yes, it does, actually. But you guys, you got to realize that how weird that can be given your location. Okay? There's more to it than that. The E911 actually placed it at the POP, which is on a TV Hill north of Kanab, which is where my antennas are. So we had to refigure that and give it an address, and we've given it the address of HQ, which is whatever that is.
Dan Ward here, 28. South Central has been sending out letters saying that it's an option to remove the landline from your cellular service, and you can reduce your fees if you choose not to have the landline.
But so, is that for cellular, Dan, or straight up data?
That
my understanding is my understanding is you do not have to have a phone now if you get cellular through South Central data through South Central.
And I'm going to throw a wrinkle in here and say, I think we need to keep the landline. If Starlink goes down, cellular service is down, a landline for emergency calls out, to me seems like a good backup.
I concur.
Just my two cents. For John and Session here, so I would encourage it to be kept.
Yeah, it's been used several times for honest to God emergencies, you know, yeah. And but that's the short version of it. At the time, the FCC program was that if you offered somebody internet, you had to throw in a VoIP, at least a single line. If that has changed, I haven't heard anything about it, but then again, it's not like I'm spending all kinds of time tracking down little edicts coming from various government agencies either.
I've gotten two letters from South Central saying that it's no longer necessary. You can reduce your fees by removing the landline.
So that must, since they're now mailing you all as another customer, that must be a relatively recent development.
It's been within the last 2 months.
Right. Okay. That would explain why I don't know about it. I'll probably get the same letter eventually, except that my class of internet connection from them is business to business, not consumer. So things may make a difference to it. It's a crazy, screwed up, multi-layered thing.
Well, according to these letters, there's been some renegotiation with the whatever the authorities are.
Right. They will probably let me know. I'm just another customer, except that I am not an end user. I am backbone provider, sort of. I get treated differently. But anyway, we don't need to bog down in that.
For what it's worth, when I try to get a hold of Kurt, I have two options. One is the apparently the landline number, and the other is his cell number. And his cell number, from what I've been hearing, his cell is provided to him by the ranch. Is that correct?
No, he uses voice over Wi-Fi with Starlink for that, as far as I know.
Okay.
The 644-5044 number is, and I'm doing this from memory, that's the South Central VoIP line, the one that's on the website. So, we don't need to spend a lot of time. Dan, if you have specific questions or anybody else, just email me about it.
Okay.
All right, moving on to insurance. Those numbers just came straight across for what we spent last year. They could go up, they could go down. So I just brought them straight across off of the what we spent.
Michael, what is the director's insurance?
I honestly don't know.
That's true. If you guys, it's like professional liability for you guys, the board members, if one of us doesn't like you and decides to sue you.
Okay, oh. I got
it. Well, it's for that, and if we embezzle funds or something along those lines, then the
there's more to it than that, but that's the short version.
Understand. I assumed it had something to do with that, but I didn't know for sure.
You guys should get a copy of the policy and read it sometime. I tell you what, if I was on the board, that'd be the first thing I want to look at.
Not a bad suggestion.
I'm not going to ask you for any bedtime reading recommendations.
Miscellaneous left it as is. I'm going to skip 78 through 82 because that's going to take too much time. We'll come back to that. Asset replacement fund. This is the money that's moved at the end of the year, assuming we still have it, to the asset replacement fund account. Could we rob from this to pay Peter to pay Paul? Yes, we could. I would like to leave it as the 4,800, and as long as it's there at the end of the year, we move it into that asset replacement account.
Quick question.
Yes.
You and I talked about this because it got forgotten for a couple of years.
Yes.
Is this what you intend to deposit into that every year, or at least
yes.
this year?
Okay. Yes.
Do you know, or Danielle, do you know off the top of your head, and I think I asked and we weren't really sure, what's in there right now?
5,200 or something. So we're going to almost double it this year.
Okay. By the way, for people who have questions about this, what it's there for is to cover generator, submersible HQ pump at the HQ well, and battery bank. Those are three very periodic, very relatively expensive things that we know are going to happen. HQ well, submersible kicks out about every 8 years or so. The batteries are good for about five. We established this several years ago because we had a couple of hair on fire moments when HQ well went out, and it's like, where's the money? Where's the money? Where's the money? And that's where this came from. So,
yeah. Danielle and I have discussed this will be moved before the budget's closed out December 31st to that other account, so it's recognized on the P&L.
Well, Michael, this is one of the other items I kind of brought up, and I thought I would just leave it go at our last meeting, but I just want to bring it back up again after reading through more stuff. So there's actually a requirement for the HOA to have a reserve fund, and this asset replacement falls into that category of the reserve funds. I know we've got a separate fund right now that we've kind of got some money into the reserve fund, but we've got a lot more than just those items that Vance mentioned that are going to need maintenance, going to require work, and we need to have a larger reserve fund to include items like this, or unforeseen expenses, et cetera, that way. And it's, we're actually required to do a reserve analysis and study and base our fund off of that and fund it appropriately based off of the reserve analysis study. So I don't think we have time or effort right now to do a reserve study, but I think we need to increase this fund. I mean, 48's a good start, but we are woefully behind. I think you mentioned at the very beginning we needed to have, most people have 70% to 100% of their annual income in the reserve. We need at least that much. And if we're not doing the reserve study and funding the reserve as needed, we're opening ourselves up to liability from the members.
I don't know I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but I don't know what you consider a reserve study. But I did a reserve study, which is why the money got moved into CDs where we're actually gaining interest versus just sitting there gaining $1.25 a month. per 10,000.
Yeah, the legal definition of a reserve study is we have to actually analyze all of the assets of the association. So the cabins, the wells, the, as they're talking about, the pumps, anything that needs, that has a life of more than 3 years, we have to be able to analyze that life and provide a maintenance schedule for that and start saving towards that. So it's a big effort. It's not.
Without, no, I understand what you're saying.
Yep.
Without tripling dues, this is what you're stuck with right now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think we seriously got to consider raising dues to start having that reserve study or reserve done. Or, I mean, if we don't do that, the other reason that they have you do the reserve studies is there's a lot of associations that were coming up with special assessments. You know, we just had an example where we might have had to had a special assessment for the water system, right? Or if something else comes up that we have to provide the service for, if we don't have the funds for it, the only way that that's going to occur is with a special assessment. So either we do small chunks now and raise the fees and start to build up a rainy day fund, a reserve fund, whatever, or we're going to have special assessments that come due. And, again, we're legally obligated to at least do the reserve study and start funding some of that. We're not going to fund it overnight, but I think we need to start. $4,800 is nowhere near enough to do that. So. I said my point, and that's we'll just put that out there for where we're at.
So the reserve fund this year, Cade, and that this is separate than the asset replacement fund, but the reserve fund this year off of interest alone, we should gain about $5,300 in our reserve fund for the next 5 years because I locked in the rates. So assuming we don't touch it, we're going to gain about $5,500 a year in the reserve fund itself. So is that a huge amount? No, but it's more than we have been getting.
Cade and Michael,
yes.
There is the third option here. You're not going to like this. The third option is to continue to blow it off like we've done for 50 years. I agree it's not optimal. I think that what you're talking about with getting interest off the CDs is a good bridge. Personally, having been at the ranch for almost 20 years, if somebody came after me for a special assessment to fund something we have never needed, I am going to pitch a fit.
Yeah.
Okay? And so, and I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
We are getting by. Are we completely legal? No, we are not. As well are we not completely legal about a lot of other things, but you're at least trying, and that's a first. One other reason we've never done the reserve study, and maybe you know more about this than I do, I was always told by people who should know that it needs to be done by a CPA and would cost almost as much as the money we could put into it for a year.
So I think we need to look at the cost. I've been in an association that has done it. It wasn't as much as that, but our association has a lot of assets. The way that and I can send this out to the members, but the way that the reserve study ordinance reads is it may be done by the board or they may hire it out and have it done. Obviously the cheaper option is to do it by the board, but then that also puts back the risk to the board of doing it correctly. But I think something is better than nothing. And then just the last risk that we run as a board, just so everybody's aware, if we ever did have to file a special assessment, well, right now a homeowner, again, hopefully the homeowners wouldn't come after us, but right now any of the homeowners could come up to us and file a lawsuit against us and automatically receive $500 in penalty. So if all 300 members did that, we're looking at a $150,000 penalty, right? Again, I don't think that would ever happen that all the members would do that. But if we ever did to get to where we needed to do a special assessment, it then becomes up to actual damages. So if they come back and say, you should have had a reserve study done and had it and should have had reserve funds and we're having to do the special assessment because you didn't, they could actually sue us for the amount of the assessment as well. So with just as old as things are getting and the maintenance that needs to be out there, I'm very uncomfortable as a board member not doing something showing that we're working towards higher reserves than $5,000 a year. But that's, so again, I don't, don't want to derail things too much, but.
Okay. That 4,800 is the asset replacement only.
Yeah. So really.
So yeah. The reserve fund, and I haven't shared this with you or anybody else, so let's get it out there. At the end of the year, I'm going to look at the P&L and see where we are and what's left over. And I will be diverting at least this much, if there is any money left over in the budget, to the reserve fund itself. So if there's money left over in the budget at the end of this year, we will be adding to the reserve fund as well.
I understand that, Michael, but that we actually have to have, we can't just do whatever's left over. Legally, we're required, and we can talk this offline, you know, about that. But there are more requirements for us as a membership to do that. So.
All right. So we'll take that offline.
Maybe we can triple our dues.
Say that again. Forgive me.
Well, that was when somebody said maybe we could triple our dues, but my proposal would be, I think we maybe need to increase it $50 at least and start putting something into reserve. I mean, that's not going to be popular and nobody's going to like that, but right now we're running right at the minimum. And so again,
Kate, and I'm just going to throw this out because, I mean, a flat rate does nothing in the long term. We all as employees, I know there are some of us out there on fixed incomes and you don't get that luxury, but we as employees of a company annually, we kind of expect some kind of increase. I mean, whether it's a cost of living increase, a productivity increase, I don't see why there hasn't been like a 3 or 4% flat fee that the dues are raised every year to cover the increased cost in fuel, the increased cost in consumables. And I know that's not going to be popular either, but I mean, as things around us go up, instead of doing a flat rate, we really should be doing a cost of living adjustment for the ranch. But we can take that. Again, that's another discussion for another day. That I don't think we're going to do that or vote on that today.
Dan Wirt here, 28. I think we should look at the precedent over the past history. There's not been a problem doing it the way we're doing it. So I'm not a fan of trying to. Trying to satisfy every possible bureaucratic requirement that doesn't really make sense for the ranch.
Right. Hey, this is Joe Bose. You got a copy?
Go ahead, Joe.
This is Joe Bose. I think this should be an executive meeting, special over this reserve stuff. Otherwise, You're taking up a lot of the board's time here and the members.
Yeah. Agreed. Let's move on. All right, roads. Took a little bit out of roads this year. I mean, last year was a huge increase in roads for the large number of culverts that needed to be bumped up in size to handle the water flow. This has mostly been brought down, some of it brought down significantly because we needed funds. Again, there's another piece down here at the bottom we needed funds for. Any question on roads? Taxes, just took what it came up. Well, some of it we don't know yet. I mean, we should have the property taxes by now, but I don't know what they are. So I just used last year's numbers. I did break out the vehicle equipment taxes, you know, for like the trucks. Any questions there?
I just got the taxes yesterday, so I can get those to you sometime this week on Dama Total.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, mine came this week too, so I assumed you got them. Water resources. I'm going to skip right to the big one. So we have the water deficiencies that we have to fix. We've talked about for a year now. I'll let Bart update in his area of responsibility about the comings and goings of that, but we set aside $5,000 per lot, which is what each lot originally paid, to make those repairs so that we meet the state qualifications. And we'll come back up to this, but basically, as it sits now, we have $1,553 left over. Any question on water before I move on back up? All right, back to the elephant. So these are the contracts that we as DSROA engage in. The water certification contract, which includes the backflow cross connection, water operator duties, it basically is what it is. That's what we're currently paying. I don't anticipate any increase this year. However, there could be. You know, this is what Danielle does. This is the bookkeeping, the records. Danielle does a fantastic job, and the amount of work she puts in, and this is all on me. So you guys can throw your darts directly at me, because this is my proposals, that we increase Danielle's salary by $2,000. I think this was woefully underpaid to begin with. That's a fairly healthy increase, but I hope it helps to retain Danielle and keep us stable. Having to teach somebody every 2 or 3 years is, Mariah did it for many years, but picking this up isn't just an overnight thing. And I'm going to, so how do I start this? Several years ago, and I don't remember who the president was at the time, but Mariah was leaving, and the president asked them, Mariah, to put together a list of her duties and what she did. And she held up 3 pages of items that she did for the minimal amount of pay that she was being paid. Let's progress on a couple of years. Those were broke down into 3 different categories. Those 3 categories were the bookkeeping, the keeping of the records, and reservations. And each of those were assigned a value, broken apart, based upon the dollars that we were paying at the time. I'm going to go ahead and bring this up. Well, here I am waving 3 pages of duties and responsibilities that is directly related to the property manager's contract. There is no way one person, I mean, there's no way one person can do all this. And there's no way a property management company can do this for $41,000. It just physically is not possible unless you are relying 100% on volunteer hours. And yes, we have some wonderful people that volunteer and do a lot of good work around the ranch, but we can't rely on strictly volunteerism to get everything done. So I made a proposal, and this kind of helps pull something out of the ranch manager's contract and the reservationist and combines the two to where we're having somebody handle not only the reservations, but also the cleaning. Those two to me are joined at the hip. They actually, you know, one needs to know exactly what the other one knows. And it just seemed sensible to combine the two. So we are currently paying the reservationist 81, $100 a year, I believe, to do those duties. And this number really should be much higher, but it's all I felt that we could do. You know, and we may decide to go forward with this, and we may not have anybody even apply for it, because it would go out to the members for open applications. The board would review, pick the best qualified candidate. There may be people out there that say, you know, it's just not worth my time. It's too much work, too much effort. And that's okay. We can then reevaluate. But to pay for it, it was the $8,100 out of the reservationist, and we reduced the property, or I reduced the property manager's contract by the $8,400 to equal the $1,600. So really, there's no new money coming here. It's just a shift of responsibilities and duties. And then the property manager's contract. Now, yes, I've read the comments. Jeff and Tina, you're going to jump in, and that's okay. I'm going to voice my opinion right off to the bat, and that is, this is a lot of work to do for free. And if we take your offer to do it for free, and you get into it, and it takes up a lot of your time, and a year from now, you decide it is not worth the free, we're right back to where we are. I would rather pay somebody than be accountable for it. And there are two options. We as a ranch can do this, or we can take this money and we can give it to the property manager and say, this is your responsibility. You figure out how to get it done. It's in your contract. There are other options to make this work, but as the homeowners association, as a group of members, I would think we would want to be able to hold one person accountability instead of just a property management company. But that's it. That's open for discussion. I've given my spiel, my speech. I'm going to open it up for anybody to comment on however they want to comment.
Well, I'd like to jump in. This is Bart.
Go ahead, Bart.
I think free sounds great until you have an issue and you have to hold somebody accountable, and or you need work done on a timeline that doesn't fit the free person's agenda. So that's my issue with free, and you get what you pay for. And if you don't, if there's no actual contractual, you know, if there's no money involved, that's what you can expect. And I think free does sound perfect and great, but you know, it's not realistic to be able to hold them accountable. And them is whoever is providing the free service. So that's my issue. I don't like free. I want to be able to hold people accountable.
So I think we need a little bit of clarification on the position too.
Exactly.
Tina, you proposed just doing the reservation portion, right? Not this whole new, all of the responsibilities. And maybe, Michael, you need to go over a little bit more what the expectation for that $14,600 is. What are all the responsibilities of that individual? Is it just doing Firefly and the reservation there?
All right, so you're right. I didn't go into the weeds because this was a proposal and I have not pulled together the list of duties and responsibilities. We have a reservationist list of duties and responsibilities already. We have the property manager's contract, which would pull out the cleaning part, the cleaning services of this. I mean, you can glean kind of an idea of what that position will evolve into. And yes, it needs to be defined more clear.
Right, I don't think we need clear details. I was just saying, you know, it's not just running the reservations. It's
no
beyond that. And I think we need clarification. There's in the chat, Tina offered to do something for free, but I'm thinking it's just the reservation piece, and I'm not 100% sure of that. I don't think you're offering to do the laundry and whatever possible cleaning, et cetera, is involved with that too. And I'm seeing Tina shake her head. But I think she was only offering taking the phone calls and managing the reservation side.
Yeah, let's let Tina go Go ahead, Tina.
So I know when Mariah had the job, she was making $15,000 a year. And then when Jennifer took over, it raised to $18,000 a year. And then when Jennifer left, you guys raised the salary to 21 and split it into three jobs. I was never in agreement to raise that job description $6,000 in 2 years. That's astronomical to me. So I wanted to volunteer my time and put the $6,000 back into the ranch. Especially now that Firefly is taking over and 95% of the work is done by Firefly, it's a no-brainer. And if I am of no value being free, then you all as board members working for free have no value either. I take that as a big,
insult
that I have no value. The backbone of the ranch is people volunteering. That's how the ranch has survived all these years. People volunteering and putting their hard work and sweat into the ranch. And that's all I'm offering. I want to bring the money back into the ranch, put it in the reserve fund or special projects or back into the roads or the playground or painting the ranch house or fixing something. I don't care what the money goes to. I don't need it in my pocket. And I am offering it for free because I don't believe the money needs to leave the ranch.
Michael?
The housekeeping part is part of Jacobson management contract. If he needs help, it's on him to hire someone out of his own salary. And that's on him, not on the ranch.
Before you go, Kathy, I want to talk about that just for a second. Kathy, you'll get your turn, I promise. So, Tina, what you're saying is that $41,000 a year is a reasonable sum for any property. I'm leaving Kurt out of this because this has nothing to do with Kurt. This has to do with a property management contract. You think any property management company can complete Exhibit A, 3 pages of responsibilities and duties for that $41,000? The board that put this out there knew that it wasn't possible. Kurt Jacobson LLC, whatever, knew that it wasn't possible, but the position had to be filled. We have to have some sort of ranch management, and the position had to be filled. Here we are 4 years later. We know that it's worked for the most part. But again, this number is going to go astronomically through the roof if we have to hire a true property manager. And you know what? We are really a hybrid property management. We're not a true property management because if we were a true property management, we would be giving the budget to the property management company as a whole and saying, here are the things we expect to get done this year, and you're expected to get them done.
And Michael, can I address that? So first, claiming the $41,000 is the only thing that the property management gets is very, very inaccurate. So they get a house, they get cars to drive, they get internet provided, they get power provided, they get propane provided, all those things. You take the value of all those things added together, and that you'll see that number climbs up to $80,000-ish. When we had our business, $42,000 is about what we netted, and we still had to pay our mortgage payment and our power bill and our water bill and our trash bill and our property insurance and all that stuff. So to say it can't be done, gross misrepresentation. That can be done. It has been done. I don't ever recall anybody when this property management idea was proposed. that anybody anticipated, including Kurt, that it was going to be one person doing all of those duties. Kurt said he was bringing three housekeepers from town that he knows to do cabin stuff. So it wasn't going to be just Kurt. A COVID hit, that changed the game, right? Work camper programs started taking off, that changed the game. Now here we are, 4 years later, not holding the property management's feet to the fire. That needs to change. We need to hold this feet to the fire. Reservation, the hospitality part, is in his contract.
Hey, let me jump in there real quickly. All right, that's great. If we're going to do this, if we're going to hold the hours, the per week or per day hours that are in that thing are more like, it's probably more like 100 hours a week or 200 hours a week to do all the work. And that's fine, right? I don't want anybody calling Kurt to ask them to pull them out of the ditch. I don't want anybody doing any of that stuff. Because the reality is, when they Kurt has to go as a property manager, people want him to help them do stuff. He can't do the work he's doing, so he's helping everybody on the ranch, right? And so you say that, but it's a bunch of BS. Because the reality is the hours, if you do a task, an hours to task analysis of that job description, it's more than 40 hours a week. It's more than 100 hours a week. All right? And so it sounds great. You're talking a good freaking game, but it's a bunch of BS. Man,
hey,
I just have to say that. Sorry.
That's where we have an advantage having history out here. So when it wasn't property management and it was actually ranch employees doing the job, there was a board decision during a board meeting that said no more pulling people out of the ditch. The ranch does not need to be responsible for damage to somebody's car and all these other kinds of things. So all of those things, when property management now became a thing, that's up to the property manager. If somebody calls the property management company and says, hey, I'm stuck in a ditch, it now becomes up to them whether they want to or they do not want to. When they were employees, they would have had to tell the people, I'm sorry, I can't help you. All I can do is call somebody. Mm-hmm. Property management changed the program altogether. So those things just don't apply. If
no, but that's the reality of the world.
Out of the ditch, right? As a property manager.
But you say it doesn't apply, but the reality is that's what people do, and that's what people expect. You know, that's what people expect. People want that. And
I pulled people out of.
No, I agree that. We don't pay it. I just don't think we pay enough. For the past year, we've been looking at this, and we don't pay enough. And 41K is not enough for it.
Is not the end of it. That is the problem. When people make that statement, 41K is not enough. 41K is not all.
That's not
you make a salary, Bart, doing your job, and then you come home and you pay your mortgage payment. Now, take your mortgage payment, add it to the whole program because you no longer pay it. That is money back in your pocket. The 41K that you're talking about is the money that goes in his pocket.
But now subtract what he has to take.
Expenses. You understand? So 41K.
I know. But do you want to know what? I can't hire somebody to be a frickin'. I can't hire somebody to be a cleaner up at Best Friends. I can't even hire a general maintenance guy for 41K. I can't.
No, can you hire them with 80K?
And then for what? No, but I can't. 41K doesn't get you anything.
If you go hire a maintenance guy and you say, hey, maintenance guy, I'm going to give you $41,000 in your pocket. I'm going to give you cars to drive at not your expense, fuel for those cars at not your expense.
No insurance.
Utility bill. I'm going to pay your mortgage payment. I'm going to give you all of those things.
From what you don't provide them to.
41K, my friend. That is way beyond 41K.
So, of that 41K, let's talk business here, because that's what you're trying to do, is you're trying to talk business. And you want to talk business, that 41K, you have to take his $1 million insurance policy payment out of that. You have to take the taxes directly out of that.
No.
So he's going to net probably, or the property management company is going to net maybe $28,000 when you're all said and done in your pocket. So the $41K in your pocket is misrepresented. That's 1099. That is not taxes taken out and everything else. So I understand what you're saying, Jeff, but let's let some others. I mean, there's Karen, Kathy, Jose's all have tried to chime in, and I'd like to get to everybody's comments before we go on.
Okay. Go ahead, Kathy. So as a property management company, are we saying that Kurt only uses his property management company for Deer Springs Ranch? Because my understanding, he has other business with his property management while he's at the ranch. Is that correct?
I can't speak to what Kurt does with his business. I don't know the answer. I know that we as members and we as a board expect the property management company that we've engaged in to uphold this Appendix A 3-page contract. And at any point in time, we can terminate that contract because there's no way that it can be done for the amount that we're paying. And they knew that going into that.
So do we know exactly how many hours he actually works for Deer Springs Ranch? You said hundreds of hours. I thought that he needed to, and I'm not saying a time clock, but, you know, he's got days off, and I know he goes out and he takes pictures, and he helps a lot of people. That is not something that Deer Springs Ranch is, it's not in their job description to go and help, you know, put gravel down on somebody else, his friends or whoever, somebody else's lot. That should not be counted as part of his hours working for Deer Springs Ranch. Is that correct?
Karen, I totally agree with your assessment, which is why in the very beginning of this, I said we're kind of a hybrid property management system. We're not a true property management system. So we want to put our little fingers and our expectations, and throughout the year we want to guide the property manager. That's not how property management works. You engage in a property management company, you tell them, this is what I expect to be completed this year, this is the budget within to do it, can you do it? And we don't do that. So we're kind of a hybrid system, and no, we don't know the hours, day-to-day, that the property management company puts in. You are correct.
And there's no contractually obligated number of hours that I've seen in the contract, right?
There is not.
No, but it is in the contract that he is supposed to give weekly assessments of everything that he's done. And we have no idea what he's done because that's not ever been done. That was one of my things that I had a problem with. And he is kind of under the envelope of the property manager. And then Kurt just works that. So the property manager position is responsible for these questions that we keep asking, and everybody goes, we don't know. And there's no accountability in holding Kurt's feet to the fire because of this property management, because he's working under that. I mean, they need to have communication with the board. Yeah, we get monthly deals at the board, and they're just a few items that are brought. But if there was, even if it was just a weekly thing, and today I did this, nobody has any ideas. And I'm sorry, Bart, when you say $100 hours per week, I don't believe that for an instance. I know that Kurt's working a lot of hours with his own company, and he does favors for people, and, you know, Kurt, he's got friends that he does special favors for, and it's just something that needs to be recorded. And we have nothing, no guideline to go by, because that has not been done. You can say Kurt should have done it. You can say the property manager should have done it, but it's not getting done.
But my next, this is Karen again. My next thing I wanted to bring up is that on the hospitality, we did the work campers. So yeah, those are free hours that they work. He's not paying them. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So that would not come out of his budget.
That now, is correct.
Deer Springs Ranch pay to have all that work done for the work campers? Was that something that Kurt put in, or did Deer Springs put in?
Deer Springs put that in. Absolutely.
Okay, so that was an added cost to us to help the ranch manager with his job, right? I just want to make sure I'm understanding it right.
Yes, you can look at it that way, Karen. Absolutely, 100%. But you can also look at it as it's an added benefit to the members of the ranch that we now have three RV pads, that work campers, and I have argued as well, that work campers and members can use. So it's not just, it's an asset, it's an added benefit, and it helps promote volunteer hours to the rest of the members. So to say it just benefits the property management company is grossly misrepresented. But okay, yes, we did pay for it.
So last comment, I want to say kudos to Tina for wanting to help out and donate her time, just like you and Bart and Brent and everybody else who is donating their time. If you truly feel that because you're not being paid, that the work is not as important or whatever you want to say, then maybe people that are on the board should probably recuse themselves of it because they don't think they're doing a good enough job because they're not getting paid for it. That's the way I see it. But I want to say kudos to Tina. I backed her all the way, and I think the hospitality contract should go back to the property management. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Karen.
Uh-huh.
This is Candy Bose, Lot 1.
Hi, Candy.
I'd kind of like to get back to the issue that was primary to everything we're talking about, and that is the reservations. I believe that there are enough people possibly qualified to be able to handle a reservations program through the Firefly. Cindy Olson, we understood there wasn't a tremendous amount of work that she had to do, but it went back on to Danielle Clarkson to do the other part. If all that you're advertising right now is to do the simplified version of what Cindy did, I think there are plenty of members capable of handling that. I like the idea of Tina being able to say, okay, I want to donate my money back to the ranch. So in reality, you are paying her if she wants to donate back. If you feel that she isn't being under a contract, well, then do the same for her as you do for every board member. Pay for her dues for a year. Make it a temporary situation, and if it doesn't work out for her or work out for you, then fine, go on to something else. But you need to have that position filled. I like the idea of Danielle possibly taking it over as the entire reservation form. If that's not what she wants, there's a position available to other members that are capable of doing it. I think this is something that we need to clarify now. I don't think it's a matter of discussing what the property manager is doing or how much is being paid. We need to make some decisions either by the board or members' input as to who's going to cover the reservations. And if it's just by the same prospect that you, as a board member, get your board association dues paid for a year, then do it that way. If she doesn't like doing it, then go a different route. But I'm like Kathy and Karen and a lot of other people, she's qualified. But I'm sitting here with my daughter-in-law. She is more than well than qualified to do the same thing. So are you going to open it up to other people, see if they would like to do it? But, yes, you have to have it defined. What does the job entail? And how much is going to be paid, or what is their position on taking the position? So I think that's what should be talked about now. Get it somehow put together, and it's the same idea as a contract. If Tina does it for no charge except pay for her dues for a year, then fine. She's under the same kind of contract that you all are. So that's what I feel, and I think that's where we should be going rather than discussing Kurt, because that's another time for the directors to talk about and get some kind of decision made there. Thank you.
Good points, Candy.
Michael, Kathy, Lot 24. My understanding is since Firefly came in, and the majority of the work is done automatically with Firefly, the only responsibility for the person on reservation is to know if their dues are paid so they can use the cabins. And that is all that, my understanding, is what Tina would be doing. That, to me, is $6,000 is a lot of money, or if you go your route of $14,500 or whatever it is, is a lot of money for that. And I feel like that's a very simple task. And if that's actually all that's needed to be done, I think it's a position, Tina, and I think we need to go back to the way it was supposed to be. Any jobs that come up need to be posted. And like the water certifier, you need to put it out there and then go in and see if they're qualified and go that route. But positions are not being put up for bid for the members, and the members should be first as far as being opportunities for working up.
So you weren't part of the executive discussion, but absolutely this would be posted. And I said that earlier, this would be posted and applications would come in for it. This was not going to be granted to somebody. So, yes, I agree with you completely on posting all positions. And no, and yes, to the Firefly. So there are more things that the reservationist needs to know than just have you paid your dues. You also have to keep track of how many days have they already used. Is it the standard rate or is it the extended stay rate? It's Firefly has taken a lot of the work that was created by having it through the website, having an email, having a database. Firefly has taken a lot of that away. You are absolutely correct. We are overpaying at $8,100 a year for the reservationist. We absolutely are overpaying that for what Firefly is now providing. I didn't feel the reservations portion of this justified the $14,600. I absolutely agree with that. But the hospitality part of cleaning the cabins, organizing that, did justify the $14,600. And yes, everybody is correct. It is in the property management contract, which is why the number was reduced. You know, we can put that money back here, and that's okay. We can do away with the reservationists and put it out for people to apply to volunteer to do it. And that leaves us $8,100 to do something with. Do we put that into the property manager's contract? Do we put it somewhere else?
So, Michael, can I just kind of add to that just a little bit?
Please do.
So, as Michael's trying to talk about, I think there is a little bit of confusion. The reservationist position, like he was saying, is a smaller position, especially with Firefly. And I think everybody's in agreement that's something that Tina could totally handle and do whatever at no charge. So just so everybody's clear, that hospitality piece is also picking up all of the hospitality responsibilities that were, as we're saying, in Kurt's contract. That's why some of those funds were brought over out of Kurt's contract, so that responsibility wasn't there. In discussions, you know, with Cindy leaving, Cindy could actually do the reservationist piece, theoretically, probably remotely, but Kurt felt that the reservation piece had a strong tie in with determining where the, if the cabins were clean. Granted, they shouldn't be cleaning the cabins because that should be our responsibility if we're using the cabins. But sometimes they might have to clean the cabins. And that, but more importantly, the laundry is probably the big piece I would think out of this that's going to take the time and justify the additional expense. So, as is proposed right now, that 14.6 is actually doing the laundry, doing the reservation, handling all the coordination, pretty much everything associated with the cabins other than the maintenance portion of the cabins. Yep. So, and if I'm misstating that billing, Mike, but that just want to make sure everybody understood how that's being proposed.
Hey, Jeff Collins, 121. Based on the title of this proposed thing, hospitality, and you roll that over into the property management's contract under hospitality, it is actually not cleaning, not doing laundry, not doing any of those things.
We can split hairs on numbers.
That's a whole different section. So this is why I had emailed Michael the other day and said, okay, what are those duties? What are we talking about? And you just referred me back to the Jacobson management contract and said, it's already in there. Okay, I looked at
No. That's I said pieces of the contract. So it does include the cleaning. It doesn't, but I didn't go into the nitty gritty details because of this conversation we're having. Why would I spend hours creating a document if we're not going to even entertain the idea? If we're not going to entertain the idea, I've just wasted all that time. I already put in enough time with this.
Well, okay, so but on the where it says reservation is slash hospitality, it couldn't have a slash cleaning person also?
Sure. Sure. Let me do that right now because it's not clear enough. I understand what you're saying, Jeff. I do. It's not clear cut and dried. It was a discussion that we needed to have. And I understand that they're opposed to it. And that's okay. I don't care if we scrub this whole line. I'm simply trying to address what I perceive as, sorry, this whole line, what I perceive as something that we can start. I mean, we can push all this back onto the property manager. Absolutely. But I guarantee that we will be looking for a new property manager if you start, as you say, holding their feet to the fire. There's no way one person can do all this for $41,000. They just can't. It's not physically possible. And
but see, that's I'm a word nut. So when things like that are said, it's not possible for one person. Who thought a one person could do this? It's more than a two-person job. It's always been two people until Kurt. It's one person now. And like I said earlier, he didn't even anticipate it was going to be him by himself because he planned to bring cleaners out from town to work on cabins and stuff. So to keep saying that's not a one-person job, we know it's not a one-person job, nor is it expected to be.
But if he cannot perform all his duties in his contract, maybe we need to accept his resignation and find someone else.
Well, so I think we've kind of got two options with this, or maybe three, right? We've got a contract with Kurt that takes us through the end of the year. And I think what the board was trying to do, this is for a budget, and it's kind of turned into position and contract and some of that kind of stuff. And we did discuss this in the executive meeting beforehand because of that fact that it's talking contracts and performance and some of all that kind of fun stuff. So we're trying to avoid the whole performance and can they perform or whatever side of things. But from a budget perspective, there needs to be possibly more funds allocated to do cleaning and stuff, because that is something that was kind of being done by Cindy as part of the work camper slash reservationist that she was doing previously. And so that gap is now there and apparent. So I think we've got three options. One is we can go back to the HOA having employed positions that are clearly defined for all of the different things that are there. That opens us up to happen to pay employee taxes and do all of that kind of stuff, but it gives the board more control over what they can actually do. We can try and continue down the route of having a HOA slash property management company something doing whatever and try and hold them to the fire, but that again, they're going to have enough money to hire all of these positions that we're saying need to be done related to it. And I don't know that currently we have enough money to do exactly that. But realistically, I think that's where, kind of where we're at. And I don't know how we associate that or tie up this budget piece of it without getting those resolved. I don't know. That's something that has to kind of be. I mean, a budget is just our plan for what we hope to do going forward. And so I think Mike was trying to figure out, you know, if we're going to create a position, let's create a funding item, line item for it. If it's used for it, it's used for it. If it's not, then, you know, we still have some flexibility of how those funds are spent or done to some extent. But it is opening up that whole discussion of should we have employees, how many employees, should we have a property management company, and so, what are their responsibilities, right?
And going down that route, Kate, as well, is just like what you were saying earlier, but we can get around that by simply having them apply for a business license. As soon as you have a business license, it's your business. You can give them a 1099, and it skirts that rule. So, and I know that because I've done it in construction. I mean, you can get around that by simply having a business license, you know, cleaning DBA.
Well, but that then becomes a requirement of the position, right? They need to have.
Correct.
Well, and again, it's not, I don't know that it's quite as simple as having a business license, and we can discuss that outside of this too, but, I mean, if we're making these positions, the positions need to be clearly defined, whether it's a contracted position, an employed position, and then we need to draft things up accordingly to make sure that they fit in wherever they need to be. But the bottom line here, for what, where do we go forward with the budget? I mean, do we leave this line item here? Do we add it back in? What do we do to get the
So, again, this was nothing more than a proposal and a discussion point. I mean, I don't care if we take it out, put the money back in the property management company's contract, and leave that $8,100 as unspent dollars. I think going forward, we know that the reservation contract has to be revisited because it's with Firefly. We've addressed a lot of the deficiencies, and it should be a little simpler to manage than $8,100 a year.
So how did we get – can you give history on how we got to the $8,100 a year? I mean, Tina was kind of going down the – we split the bookkeeping position into three positions, reservationist.
Some of this was before my time, but when – the office administration position, Mariah, Jennifer, whatever, it evolved into a broken out section of the three categorized duties, which is bookkeeping, record keeping, and reservations. And reservations was a lot more labor intensive, updating spreadsheets, whatever, when we had all of it coming through the website. Now with Firefly and that piece taken out, that reservation piece is less time consuming. At least in my view, it's less time consuming, and I think we can adjust it. And instead of just throwing that $8,100 at something else, I put it here. And that's really in a nutshell how that evolved. Nothing more, nothing less.
Well, I'm just wondering how we came up with $81,000 figure, because we got a budgeted line item for $21,000, right? I mean, if you divide that by three positions, that's only $7,000, and the year before it was $18,000. So I'm just curious where the $8,100 came up. I mean, I can kind of see the 14 for Danielle if you take the 21 and take two positions out of that.
So I separated the monies out. This includes 2K, so this would have been 12,600. Plus the 8,100, 8,400, whatever, it's probably 8,400. So this would have been 12,600 plus 8,400 equals the 21,000 from last year.
So, okay, so the 12.6, that makes more sense, 8,400. Okay.
Because this includes a 2K increase.
Gotcha.
Again, that was on me. Nobody else brought that up. I totally on me, and that's up for debate. But.
Well, so if we're only talking the reservationist position, the difficulty with having somebody that's not boots on the ground with it is that they're going to have to interface with, right now, the property management company whose responsibility it is to let them know that the cabins are reserved or need to be cleaned or whatever that way. I mean, that could definitely be put into their job description.
Yes.
But that, I mean, that was the problem I thought we were trying to solve a little bit, is by pulling some of that stuff out, as well as that then puts everything related to the cabins under one position.
Yes.
Related to it. So
the communication back and forth, things can get lost. So I'm going to take by the comments and the discussions we've had that basically everything else on the budget is okay. Haven't had, at least as far as the board members who are actually going to vote on it. This piece, we have some opposition to, and that's okay. I'm totally okay with, I mean, that having the discussions is where the good ideas bubble to the top. And that's all I want, is the discussion. We can put this back into, you know, make this back the 41,000, zero this out for now. And we can leave those dollars in the reserve fund, and we can investigate this further if we want to go down that route. Or we can vote on. Go ahead.
Kevin Poole, lot 64. Since there seems to be so much opposition to the idea of those, I agree with you. Let's table that. But let's also throw out there for discussion or for thought, maybe the members who are highly opposed to attempting different things need to consider. I propose we take the 8,100 from the reservationist position. We increase the amount of annual dues by, I believe it's 10% that we're allowed to do annually. We couple those two funds together, which will give about a $23,000 differential. Roll that into the property manager's contract, and then see if the property manager can't do some real work with $23,000 towards maintaining these cabins. You know, there's a poison pill that somebody's going to have to eat in something somewhere. Nothing ever comes easy or ever comes free. It's always with hard choices and decisions that have to be made. Unfortunately, we live in a money-driven society, and that's the way it's going to work. Thank you.
Anyone else with some input?
I think my only put in on this is I think this is the actual positions and stuff are going to take a lot of discussion, and the actual funds to do that. So back to Kevin's point, I mean, if we, I don't know, even if you put it into some other fund to be able to say additional, I don't know. I think we're going to have a hard time selling a 10% increase right now, and that's probably going to take communication and stuff right as well. And maybe we can plan that for next year's budget and start the communication and have real plans where that money's going to go. I think it's going to be a little bit hard to get that. The board could do it technically, but I'd like to communicate and have more feedback from members, and I think we have to have more information before we can actually increase that. So from a budgetary standpoint, I mean, if the budget has to change mid-year or we address it or find it from that perspective, I think the cleanest right now is to proceed like you're doing. But I think the board itself has to take all of these items in consideration and continue working to resolution on them. We can't just let it go at this point.
All right. In the chat, how about if we eliminate the Linen services at the cabins. That has been brought up in the past. We've talked about having those using the cabins bring their own linens and take their own linens, and that would be do away with the laundry portion, which is a big piece. I don't use the cabins, so that it doesn't impact me. But if I did use the cabins, bringing my own linens and laundry, and that kind of defeats the purpose of me wanting to come out to the ranch as easy as possible and enjoy the ranch when I'm bringing my house with me to stay in a cabin. So that's just one voice, but I think providing that extra piece is what makes, or at least helps make, the cabins attractive to those that use them instead of bringing their own stuff.
Well, and maybe as part of this, again, I think there's still a lot of evaluation. Maybe we need to do some polls and some surveys or whatever to see if that's a viable, entertainable option that people that do use the cabins would entertain. I'm kind of with you, Michael. I don't like bringing them. I'd rather pay the money, but if we can't get somebody to do the work either, then that's...
Yeah. I fully expected this conversation to go exactly how it's gone. And I expected the players to be exactly the players I expected them to be. And that's okay. That's what I wanted, was the conversation. We have a very, very small representation of members here. What do we have? 15, 18 people on out of 300.
Michael, so to Kate and kind of Kevin's point, I think the cabins are great. I think it's wonderful. We bought into it with the cabins here and all these things. But people are not realizing that probably only 30% of the membership even use the cabins. So to Kevin's point about raising the dues 10% and adding it to this and putting that into the cabins, at some point the cabins become cost prohibitive to all the other members who are not using the cabins, like yourself or like us, since we built our house. How much of those expenses do we burnt for the 30% of the people who do use the cabins? So if all those costs just keep going up and up and up and up and up, pretty soon you're going to have people saying, hey, let's get rid of the cabins because they're cost prohibitive.
No. So
a whole different snowball effect of other problems.
I understand where you're headed. Let me address that outright. We have separated the budget out now so that – oh, come on, machine, go away. We have separated the budget out now so that we can see the income versus the cost. This is something that we haven't seen outright in the P&L in the past. We're going to be able to see what the cabins cost us and what the income is on the cabins. And the goal is to be revenue neutral. If that means increasing the fees on the cabins, that means increasing the fees. It means decreasing the fees. But I'd like to see the cabins get to the point they're revenue neutral, which means 230 other people, the 60% you're saying that don't use them, aren't paying for them. The people that use them are paying for them. That's the end goal. And that's
where we're never going to get there. If you take truly all the expenses associated with cabins, you're never going to get there because the cost of cabins per night is going to just be too high, right? If you say the reservationist, since that's cabin related, that expense needs to go into cabins. 80% of the property management work is cabins. So take 80% of that, push that off onto those 60 people or whoever use the cabins, it just becomes cost prohibitive, right? So some things we accept as membership that we got to pay for, right? So the property management company or the caretaker, whatever you want to call them, I'm going to eat some of that, right? Because even though I know 80% of their job is cabin related and I don't use the cabins, because that's what I signed up for, right? Because I want paid, or you or Bob or anybody else, to be able to use the cabins, because maybe you don't have a house. That is what a community is, but at some point that becomes taking advantage of the community, and it just becomes too costly.
Well, I think that's where we're going to have a balance, right, Jeff? I agree with you. I don't think we'll ever get there, but at the same time, I don't think we're actually recouping as much of the cost as we can. So we've got to be able to do both, and we're not going to solve that in this budget meeting. Back to the original point is, like, the cabins have to be addressed, the contracts have to be addressed, and we've got to figure out how to do that. But we need a budget for the next year moving forward. So that's where I'm.
Dan Ward here, 28 plus. Personally, I would not object to bringing my own linens to the cabin, to the cabins, and that's how I would vote on a poll.
Thanks, so maybe that's what we need to do, Dan. Is Danielle, can you put together a poll, and I'll work with you on. Well, the board as a whole will work with you on what the poll relates to with the cabins and laundry. And maybe we can put that out to the rest of all the members instead of just the 18 that are here, and see what the feedback is. It's a good idea, Dan.
Sounds good.
My only comment, this is Scott, lot 15. My only comment is when we raised the dues, the $25 non-refundable, we caught a lot of flack from that also. And that was trying to recover some of the costs of the new system and also to help fray some of the costs of the rent, too. And if we do raise it, I'm sure we'll get flack that way, too. But that might be the only way we can do it.
Nobody's going to be 100% happy. And right. we as a board accept that. Whether it's me or the next board or the past boards, nobody's going to be 100% happy with the decisions the board makes. And we're going to have to do the best we can with the information we have.
I understand that. Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I know you do, Scott. I was just commenting on your.
No, I was just replying for what I just said. So, yeah.
Yep.
Well, Michael, I think kind of our point to all of this, even with Tina's volunteering to do the reservationist job, is that there is a dozen different cost-effective ways to handle some of this stuff than just creating another job. Throwing more money at something. Money doesn't solve problems.
It solves problems. And not having a dedicated person, back to Bart's point, not having a dedicated person that you can hold accountable. And I'm sorry, Brent, I'm going to throw you under the bus here because it's not meant that way, and please don't take it that way. But was there ever a budget for the electrical building? The answer to that is no. Was it ever approved? Was it ever? I mean, it was approved, and yes, it's a good idea to go do. But I have set aside the things that went to the electrical building that was all volunteer time, that was all done without. I mean, I as a board member for the past year have had very little knowledge of what's the next bill is coming for the electrical building. And Brent volunteered all his time to do that, along with others. You volunteered your time to do that, along with others. But do you have any idea what that electrical building has cost the other 300 members?
I have no idea.
I know. That's my point. And when you don't have defined positions and you don't have defined budgets for that position, you run into just that. A lot of people have had their fingers in it. They've done a lot of work on it. And nobody... But me currently really knows what it's cost. And I only know what it costs this year.
But part of that is what the board's job is. We didn't know that the RV spots were coming either. There was no budget for that. It just showed up one day.
There was a budget. I remember the meeting and they set aside $4,500 to start with. And I was not on the board at that time, and I remember that whole discussion. So you're wrong there. I do recall that discussion and the money that was set aside to do it.
If it was set aside, I didn't see a specific line item for it. So it might have been in a miscellaneous or in a roads fund or in a something, but.
And you're right. Yeah. And I have tried to correct and be very transparent of these line items, and you can see the flack I'm taking for it, which is why others have not been so transparent.
Well, to me, this kind of reeks of slipping in a job approval.
No.
in a budget type thing. There's 100 other ways to keep those monies set aside in case the board wanted to do something like this. A job thing is all this is all different discussions. It shouldn't even be happening during a budget meeting. Budgets are just numbers.
It's enough.
To put that in there like that, to me, is crazy.
And you're wrong. This is the exact time to have that discussion, because if you don't set aside the funds today for the coming year, you get into the next year and go, oh, crap, we don't have the money to do ABC, and now we're stuck in a pickle.
Well, you missed my point. Setting aside the funds is one thing, right? There could be a line item right there that just says miscellaneous, $6,000. That was from the reservationist cost, right?
Because miscellaneous was not $6,000.
Necessarily, other than it appears, I'm just telling you how it appears from an outward perspective, that a job is trying to be created, slipped into the budget without... However, the job thing gets discussed, whether it's board doing it separately, hey, let's make a job, whatever. It's just convoluted. It shouldn't be convoluted like this. Two distinct different things.
I'm sorry, that's your perception. That was not the intent. And I thought it was very transparent. I'll take the feedback and do the best I can to fix it in the future, assuming I'm still on the board in the future. But
No, you're a treasurer for life.
It was put there for open conversation, Jeff. It was not slipped in, and I take offense to that.
Dan Wirth here. Am I understanding correctly, Tina wants to volunteer her time to be reservationist? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I don't understand the problem with that. And I'm not sure, Michael, I understood your comments about the electrical building. My understanding is that there was a large a portion of that which was volunteer work.
Yes.
Is there a problem with that?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely okay. Not. The volunteer work was great. And yeah. A lot of people volunteered on it. But there was never any money set aside for all the little things that came across this year that we had to pull from other people's budgets, either out of electrical or upper or lower cabins or wherever, to pay for those little pieces that came across.
Okay, so, but it worked.
It did. It absolutely worked. We made it work out. And we, as a group, as DSROA, will make it work out. There's no question about that. My point was basically that we should have had a line item and we didn't. And it would have probably spurred more discussion about, well, do we set electrical to the lower cabins for, and I'm just going to throw a number out because this wasn't the number, but do we do it for 10,000? Or 5,000 or 6,000, and that would have spurred more conversation that we're dumping more dollars into cabins that 230 members aren't using and whatever. My point was this wasn't in any way meant to be slipped into the budget. It was there as open discussion.
Well, the Deer Springs Ranch, should operate welcoming volunteer labor and contributions, because otherwise the amount of money necessary simply exceeds the budgets of many people.
Yes.
And since there is a history and precedent of substantial volunteerism at the ranch, I'm not understanding why there is opposition to Tina volunteering to do the reservations.
It's not an opposition to Tina. It's not an opposition to anybody. You know, this, the reservationist position, that's fine. If we want to separate, and it sounds like at least the people that are on the call, don't want to entertain this idea. Totally okay with that. Let's move on from it. And we've put the money back into Kurt's budget. We've put this down in the reserve. We'll leave it at that for now. And we will, post the reservationist's duties as open to apply for, and Tina or anybody else can apply for them.
Okay. As what, a paid or volunteer job?
That would be determined by the board since it's in a contract after the fact. But it sounds like the leanings of everybody is a free volunteer position.
Okay. So maybe this could be added to a poll where the membership is polled on, say, one item of the poll being we can reduce the budgeted amount for laundry if everybody brings their own linens. Is that okay with you or not? Is there any will the membership accept one member volunteering to do the reservation job? And then you can put out the reservation job. You can list it as a volunteer opportunity. And there may be more than one person volunteering.
Agreed.
So, Dan, I think just real quick with the positions, I think the board has to have another meeting with all of the positions, and I'm not sure that qualifies for an executive. We'll have to kind of talk some stuff or figure that out. I mean, if we're actually talking how somebody's performing with a contract, I think that falls possibly into an executive meeting, but I think there might need to be some open discussion so that you guys have a little more transparency on what positions need to be created or available, whether they're employees or contractors, some of that kind of stuff. The board's going to have to decide some of that, and I think the members can be involved and should hear those discussions and be a little bit more aware of some of the thought process that is going into those positions is one point. And then the second point is you keep asking or talking about what's the problem with volunteering. I think we totally appreciate volunteers. My concern with volunteers is if we get used to operating with volunteers, what happens when those volunteers leave for whatever reason? You know,
then you find another volunteer.
Possibly, right? But I mean, Brent does so much for the association right now. When he wins the lottery and decides to buy 2,000 acres in Montana and leave us all high and dry, I mean, that's a huge gap that we've got to fill. So we can balance it out, but
in that situation, somebody rises to the occasion and fills the gaps.
You're putting a lot of trust in humanity, Dan. I mean, we do have some great individuals, and I think they'll help out. But
you're talking to a veteran pessimist.
Okay.
So Deer Springs Ranch is something different. It's different from quote unquote humanity. And so we can see that in people like Brent Fulmer and many others. But at the end of this budget discussion, I would like to make a couple of comments, on several issues that have come up here regarding money. So if the budget discussion is done, then I would like to say a few things.
All right. So yes, I'm going to go ahead and make the proposal that we ratify the budget as it currently sits. You can see I deleted this out, restored. The only changes made from what was sent out was I deleted out the reservationist hospitality amounts, restored that back into the property manager's contract, which leaves us a net of $7,700 in the reserve. Other than that, I propose that we approve the budget.
Adopt
the budget, however you want to say it, as it sits for 2024.
I second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 I'm waiting for you.
Aye. That's six. There's one more.
Opposed.
All. Thank you. I should have asked. All opposed? Okay. So the motion passes. Kevin, do you want time to express the opposal, or do you want to just move on?
My opposition to it is solely based upon we have a position that is currently held by an individual that we just canned the money for. So did we just fire Cindy Olson, or what's going to happen with that position? So, I mean, that's what I'm opposed to. So I don't understand the vote. I think it was premature.
Okay. So, yes. You're right, and I did jump the gun. Yes, the reservationist position in its current state is going away. We have to entertain the idea of the free position. We can put it out for free, and Cindy can offer to do it for free. You know, but that's where I think this is headed is, we're going to put the reservationist position up probably next month. So next month, we need to give Cindy a 30-day notice, and the new position for reservationist will start January 1, and we'll explore the free option. Any other input?
By for free, you mean volunteer.
Yes. I mean, that is the definition of, yes, volunteer. Do it for nothing.
Well, I don't like that characterization. It's doing it for the ranch, not for nothing.
I like Cindy Bose's, what she brought up. If we gave paid their dues for a year, and see how the person does and go from there.
And we
rather
can
than just free.
Yeah, we can bring all that up as we define the contract and we post it out there before we do, Scott. I didn't want to get into that detail. I mean, because this is the budget, not necessarily defining the duties, responsibilities, and any beneficial reimbursement for doing it.
Well, and even to that point, I don't know that, I mean, Cindy's still got a position until the end of this year, right? So,
yes.
I mean, we haven't decided what that position is going to look like. We got to start preparing something for that.
But, so, and we may get into the weeds of this, and Cindy's position comes back, and we have to figure, we use this money up. But $8,100 is far more than I think the position should be paid currently with Firefly. That was the whole point of Firefly, was to reduce the reservationists' responsibilities and duties and time spent doing it. And we need to address that position. So there's money out there if we have to pay for it. But yes, this needs to be readdressed with Firefly. So, Kevin, the budget still is out there to pay the position if we have to. But this position does need to be reevaluated for what we're spending on it.
So just for me, just to reiterate for everybody, from my perspective, after this meeting, we've adopted a budget, but we've also determined that more discussion around all of the positions in the ranch needs to occur, one, and then two, more discussions around the fees that are being collected for the cabins and how the cabins are paying, quote unquote, for themselves, also needs to be discussed by the board. So I've heard that loud and clear, and I think those need to be discussed going forward. They're just not something that can be solved in a budget meeting.
Okay, so are we going to have a poll of the membership regarding how linens are provided?
I think at a minimum, there probably needs to be a couple other things around the cabins and some of those kind of things as well.
I'd like to open up more discussion on that. I really do. I think that would – I know that it used to be that the linen was put in a bag and set on the bed, and you used what you used. Now it's done differently. Cindy is making the beds. And so the linens are being put out there, whether they're being used or not. And I think that's not correct.
Every time I've used the cabins recently, there's a bag there waiting for me to make out do the linens.
Too far into the weeds for a budget discussion.
Yeah.
Too far into the weeds.
Yeah, point of order, please.
Yeah.
We're on the budget, not cabin linens. Point of order, please.
No, it was a discussion of bringing this attention to the members.
In the future, yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Michael, are you done?
Yes. I'm done, unless Kevin wants to have a revote.
Okay, I feel the need to move on. And yep. I'm gonna give you a little advice. No good deed goes unpunished.
And that's okay.
I appreciate the work you put in on that. I've been keeping quiet throughout the whole discussion, and I want to bring up just one point from the whole thing. And by the way, I'm not going to waste your time right now, but I can give you a breakdown on what the electrical building costs.
Yes, I have it too. And I wasn't trying to do that as you did a bad thing, Brent. It was simply pointing out that we did some things without budgets, and that's why I put this line item out here, is I thought we may have a need in the future, and I want it on the budget as a potential for the future, not necessarily a guarantee, and that's all that was. So,
okay, no, I understand, yeah. But I can give you that breakdown.
Yeah.
All right, now here's the one thing we have to remember about the property manager's contract. Yes, a previous board entered into it, but Kurt also agreed to it. He had the opportunity to say, I can't do all those things, all right? When he first started working there, and I worked with him, I trained him, as I have most of the other managers since 2002, I explained to him all the things that he had to do, and no one can do all those things. I'll say this right in front of everybody. Kurt is one of the four best managers we've had here of the people I've worked with. In some ways, he's number one. In some ways, he's number four, but he's never below number four. He's a hardworking guy, but no one can do everything in that contract. So when he entered into that contract, he has a level of responsibility to understand that he couldn't do it. That was the time that they should have been negotiated down. That's in my opinion. Okay, nothing else. But we can move forward from here, and let's just get through the rest of the meeting. And then we'll work on the details of the other part of this thing down the road. Everyone agreed?
Agreed.
Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed. Right. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, this Dan Wirt, 28. I would like to make a few parting comments about several aspects of this budget discussion. I don't know whether you all noticed, but a member named Israel Whitbeck chimed in briefly with a snark, which was, why don't we increase the dues 3 times? And this is, the origin of this is really that he is one of the members who is supporting the idea that Clarkson LLC should be a property manager and able to develop association land to pay to put a lot of money into the budget. And of course, this is rejected by the overwhelming majority of the membership. And so all of these items, like the discussion about the reserve fund and how it doesn't comply with various governmental regulations, but it goes way beyond that. For example, money for roads, money for water development, but all of these things get back to an important issue, and that is items that the association owns, that the membership own, that can be used to pay for things like increasing the reserve fund or neighborhood development of roads or neighborhood development of water resources. And that is the 4 association lots not association property, but lots, platted lots that the DSROA owns, and how those can be utilized to plug all of these holes in the budget. And that gets back to our current president, Brent Fulmer's ideas about how these lots can be utilized. And again, it's not selling association common property, which is under Title 17 of the statutes. These are resources that fall under Title 13 that can be sold by the association in the course of the usual business. And so I don't think that these ideas need to be investigated before there is talk of increasing dues by 10% or increasing dues 3 or 4% per year or by the cost of inflation. That's what I think ought to be done.
Thank you, Dan.
Kevin, lot 64, back to the question of should we have a revote? I think we should, just solely on the grounds of staying in order. I think there's actually 2 things there. Do we accept the budget as presented, and are we terminating the reservationist position?
Well, the answer is we're not terminating the reservation's position. We are changing the reservation position to meet the current business needs.
Are we still evaluating all of the positions, right? Because Kurt's contract kind of plays into that too. I think we could just say we're still evaluating all the positions.
Yes, but as the reservationist position is right now, it will not be in that format. That is correct. So yes, we can do a revote, and I'll reword it a little bit, Kevin, and if this is wrong, please correct it. Let's adopt the budget as it is presented, and as a board, we are going to review the current three contracts, water operator, bookkeeping, and reservations, four positions, reservations and property manager, for the going forward for 2024.
Anybody? This is Brent again. Remember, this is the budget for 2024.
Yeah.
We're still functioning under the budget for 2023, correct?
Correct.
Okay, all right. So as far as it goes right now, we still have a reservationist because we're still paying her till the end of the year. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So we're not without a reservationist unless she decides to terminate. But we're not without a reservationist, and this is for the 2024 budget. So
correct.
As far as I'm concerned, we will work through the other part of this, and we know how much money we have to spend in 2024. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. All right. Kevin, do you have anything else?
Well, I think we were asking to revote just in case he wanted to change his vote after the clarification that he made. And so we all need to revote again is what I'm assuming we need to do. Right, Michael?
Yes, that was my understanding of Kevin's comment.
My point, the budget I'm fine with. My question was, are we voting to terminate the position, which is a separate item?
That is a separate item. We're not doing that at this time. So if we want to revote and you want to amend your vote, we can revote. And I'll second the motion to revote. What's that, Kevin?
I say I don't think there's necessarily a need to revote on the budget. I just wanted the clarification if we were voting to terminate that position. Since that position is covered by the 2023 budget and we're not voting to terminate that in 2023, then the budget as going forward on 2024 stands with you guys' vote. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Well, the revote would just allow you to approve that as well, so it would be unanimous versus one opposing.
Doesn't matter. It's carried.
It does matter. It does matter, Kevin.
Kevin, do you want to change your vote? And that's okay if you do.
Or if you don't.
To support the budget, I'm fine with supporting the budget. I mean, I think the point of clarification is made. I'll vote yes on going forward with the budget with the understanding that we are reviewing all these other positions and things because that's very unsettled.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so I make a motion that we revote on just the budget and adopting the budget for the 2024 year. Anybody second?
I'll second it.
So I'll say it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I oppose this time.
I hate to do it again, guys, but I'm going to oppose it once again. We failed to include that we're going to be reviewing these positions. Brent Fulmer brought that suggestion up. I think it's a great idea. I think we need
just on the budget.
Yeah, we are just voting just on the budget itself, not the positions. If we want to do something,
okay, then
yep.
Budget only. Aye.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Are we ready to move on from that?
Yep, I'm done.
Okay. All right. Kurt, are you on property manager's report?
I haven't seen Kurt on unless he joined. Scott, did you see him on?
No, I haven't seen him on.
Okay. All right. We're going to go to the brief report of each member. And, Bart, you can include your water report when it comes to you. Kevin, you want to talk about infrastructure, and I'd really like you to address the problems with the stairs at the garden cabin and the issues with cabin one.
Yeah, that's where I was going. As far as the cabins are concerned and the infrastructure issues, and cabin one does have some structural issues in the basement wall that need to be investigated, I would suggest, in lack of budget, that we consider closing that cabin for this season to ensure the safety of all of our members. The garden cabin, the external stairwell going to the upper deck, is in very bad shape and needs to be replaced. We can probably work that into the maintenance budget that we have. It should not be a massive expense to make that safe, but at its present condition is also unsafe and needs to be addressed. Other than that, it is, to my knowledge, all the upper cabins are closed. 6, 9, and 10 are closed, and the remaining of the cabins are due to be closed shortly after Thanksgiving. I believe Brent and Kurt have been on top of those closures, and all of that seems to be in good order. Other infrastructure items would be covered in by other people with more knowledge in water and all these other areas, so I will leave that up to those guys. Thank you.
Hey, Kevin, real quick. Which cabin did you say should be closed? You're recommending should be closed? Was that one? I thought one was already closed.
I'm talking about for the season, taken out of rotation completely, pending verification that the thing is safe or that whatever repairs need to get made are made.
So you're talking for the 2024
because
season?
Right now, yes. Right now, no one can guarantee that it's going to be structurally sound, and I would not want to be put in the point of liability of saying, yeah, everything's great, and then have something go wrong. Not that I believe it is going to go wrong, but anytime you have bowing in a wall, that needs to be investigated.
So is there, I mean, we've got a while before we have to reopen for the season. We're saying we don't think we can get that evaluated through the winter and stuff that way and possibly resolved?
Maybe. It depends on the weather more than anything, because the upper cabins will probably get snowed in before very long. I'm not sure we have the budget or personnel to get up there and do that work. So that's kind of an outlier at the moment.
But we don't have to make a decision today. We can kind of decide once we're closer to opening up the cabins, right?
Correct.
Gotcha. Understand. Thank you.
Dan Wirt here. Kevin, what is wrong with cabin one?
One of the basement walls, I'm not sure north, south, east, west, but one of the walls has got dirt that's been backfilled against it, or just washed down, or however it got there, that's put pressure on that wall over the course of time, perhaps made worse by all the moisture of last winter, but it's putting a bow in that exterior wall. So the weight is pushing against an exterior wall. And that's just not something you want to stick your head in the sand and act like it's not there. It's just something that needs to be addressed and confirmed that it either needs repair or whatever. We probably need someone with more expertise than I have to look at it, but it's definitely a concern.
Okay, and then the garden cabin problem is?
The stair risers. Actually, the external staircase going to the upper level is just weathered to the point where some of the steps have broken and fallen away, and it's just in a state of aging. It just needs to be replaced. And since talking about, yeah, it's like two or three step stringers. I think there's three sets of them. There's a landing involved. Most of the timber that there does not appear to be too bad off, but the stairwell is definitely needs to be replaced.
Okay, thanks.
And Kevin, you were just going to ask for volunteers on that, I could tell.
Yeah, we could always use volunteers on that.
All right, thank you, Kevin. Larry, are you on?
Thank you. I am here. I don't have much new to report other than I did go ahead and clear and push down the slash pile pit and have continued to do a little cleanup on our old slash pile burn area in overall cleanup around the gravel pit area. I'm contemplating getting with Brent and Spencer, the fire marshal, and seeing about whether it would be an acceptable and a good idea to go ahead and burn that slash pile when we have snow cover. We've got hundreds and hundreds of cubic yards of volume of fodder that we filled that wash up with, which is beneficial in one respect, but it's also, I mean, that's just a lot of organic matter. I don't know, Brent, you can maybe look at it and think about it. Would it be of any benefit to burn that in the snow or just keep piling it in there? Other than that, I don't have anything new to add or bring up.
Yes, you do. You have one other thing. Huge win on wildlife. Way over budget.
I think I had budgeted an income of around $15,000, and I think we nearly hit $20,000 on wildlife for this year. So hopefully we'll do better next year than we're projecting, but we've cut that back. Michael and I talked about it. We cut it back just because we simply don't know. And when we take a hit from the Landowners Association that Deer Springs participates with, received 19 total tags in the past, and next year we will only receive 9 total tags. So basically cut in half. Hopefully the income won't be cut in half, but
yeah,
yet to be seen.
Thanks, Larry.
Got it, Larry?
Yes.
Okay, I'm a little disappointed. I wanted a video from you on your new crusher working.
That's top secret.
Okay. All right. Bart, are you on?
Yes.
Anyway, if you want to do your spiel and include your water report while you're at it.
Okay, well, that's really the spiel. So our booster pump application or waiver application was approved by the health department. Kurt and I met to price out the total cost to the ranch. We came in at around $21,000 for the ranch's side of the project. We'll probably need to include some escalation cost in that if we can't do this until next year. So there may be some escalation material cost increases. So probably it's going to be closer to $22,000, $23,000 for the ranch side of the project. So the waiver that we received from the health department basically says we need to implement our proposed solution, and if we don't implement it by 2026, the waiver won't be renewed. And so basically every 3 years we're going to need to apply for a new waiver on this. So we do have a little bit of breathing room to implement it. But because we have that solution, the 50 points that were assessed to our water system were removed. So our water system right now is in the clear. The standard issues of water testing still needs to be done. I shouldn't say it needs to be done. We had some issues with some back teeth hits, but now that we're going to be shutting down the cabins, that won't be a big issue. We still will need to test. Again, that testing just requires coordination between the water operator and the ranch manager to make sure we do proper flushing of the system as needed. For the requirements for cross-connection administrator and cross-connection testing, we have options in town that we can contract that work to if when our current water operator leaves in March. And so I think we're We don't have any issues there. It's just going to be most likely work that needs to be outsourced. For the water operator, we're going to have the ranch manager is going to get certified in drinking water or small system operator in, I believe it's going to be in late February, early March. And so that's kind of my report. Any questions?
Mark, this is Larry. My question is on the pricing of the cost out for those four water connections, is that materials and labor, or is that materials only on the 20?
That was materials only. That was materials only with the property manager saying that he would do the labor. If we are going to include labor in that, then the price goes up. The price goes up for the fix. And so I think the ranch has committed at least to $5,000 per connection. So our costs shouldn't go up. It would just increase on the landowner's side.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, Larry?
It does. I didn't know if that was all the parts and pieces, materials, supplies, and labor or not, just the supplies.
Yeah.
To
be clear and just to clarify, I would call that an engineer's estimate of cost. Kurt and I got together. We kind of priced it out, went online, looked at stuff. At the end of the day, there are, freight costs weren't included because we know ranch members that will volunteer to haul some of those materials, so we don't have to worry about that. The differences between prices that you Norwesco tanks are $1,300 for an 1,100-gallon tank right now. When we actually go to purchase them in the spring, will they be more? Don't know.
Yeah.
Right? So it's kind of a rough estimate right now.
Hey, Bart.
Yes.
It's Vance, Bart. Before you sign off, I just want to throw a big kudos out to you for following through on the regulatory agency side of this thing while us dirt digger types, have little to no patience for that kind of thing. I mean, you came through for us, man.
No, thank you. Much appreciated. Unfortunately, we have to do the regulatory side. We're a public water system, and it's kind of the administrata that we have to do, and it's not fun, but it's something we got to do.
Yeah, I know. I just want to glue pipe together and connect wires. I get you.
No, thank you.
Is that it, Bart?
I got one quick question, Brent. Sorry. We've budgeted and committed for the $5,000 per, but you're saying it's going to be $2,324. Does the board need to discuss how we're going to handle that additional?
Well, it's going to be – so the commitment is we're going to split that cost with the lot owner. So the connection cost with the lot owner. And so we've committed to $5,000 per, which was their initial connection fee. We haven't committed to any more. And I don't think we're proposing to do that unless the lot owners bring that up as an issue and propose it as that we commit more money.
Okay, so to clarify splitting, so if the total cost is 23 and we split it, are we only talking 11 or are we committed for the full 20,000?
Well, they still have to do their side. So I did not price out the – sorry, I'm making some noise on my end here. We did not price out their side. So the things that the lot owners are going to have to do is they're going to have to provide a pump. They're going to have to provide a solar charging system for that pump, and they're going to have to do the piping from the tank to their lot. So when we calculate those costs, it's probably going to be a wash, but those are owner-supplied items that we're not, we don't want to get into their – all we have to do is approve their pump selection. that's it. But I don't want to tell them how they're going to do it.
No, I totally understood on that. So I guess when we're saying splitting costs, we're saying they do their side, we do our side. But our side right now is coming out at 23, so
our side caps at $5,000 per connection, and they cover the rest of it.
Okay, so then they're going to have to, if there's an additional cost per, say it for each one, it's $300 or whatever, they're at $500 or whatever it is, they're going to have to cover that as part of their sharing of whatever it is.
Right, okay. Yeah, and so there's going to be, you know, an example, some of the, like, four lot 143, we're going to move their meter from its existing location to adjacent to the tank, right? So there's more, like, and there's around 500 feet or something like that we're going to have two-inch or one-and-a-half-inch HDP that we're going to have to put in, right? Most of the other lots, it's going to be, like, 50 feet. But that one is more. So the costs are different, and so it's going to be a discussion with each lot owner on kind of the contribution that they're going to need to do for our side of the connection.
Gotcha. Well, and that's kind of aligned with what I was expecting. I just wanted to confirm that that's what we're doing. And I guess our ammunition on our side, too, is that's really not including the maintenance or the labor costs as well. So, I mean, they're getting more than the $5,000 out of us. Realistically, if we do that portion, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't think. I mean, if we use anyone but the property manager, the costs are going to be
go through the roof. Yep,
extraordinary. Yes.
Yeah, I understand where we're at. Thank you for the update.
Any other questions?
Mark, this is Pete Collins. Did you say that Kurt's going to take the certifications for the water operator?
Well, as the property manager, he will. He said he was going to. Right now, Jeff has, you know, he's going to be finished in, I believe it's March, and we need another water operator. We need someone certified. I'm a certified water operator, but I'm right now my certification is restricted because I have the application to become unrestricted, but I'm not up at the ranch all the time, and the preference would be that, you know, the water operator be up at the ranch. And it falls well within kind of the duties and expectations of the property manager. So the property manager was going to do that. If you are you raising that question as a?
Well, I have two questions with that. If he takes on the water operator duties, that's just adding to his plate, which he can't handle already.
Well, he's already, so to your point, most so, and I think Brent can chime in on this as well. This is something that they used to do anyways before Jeff took assume those responsibilities. They would do the water testing.
When Phil and Rachel Hunt were the caretakers, it was decided when they left, because Rachel was the water operator, when they left, they were going to separate the two tasks, because when the caretakers leave, the water operator leaves also. So they had decided when she left to separate the two, so that we always had a water operator.
Well, but currently in the contract, Kurt's contract does say that he will get certified at his own cost and be water. So that may be a holdover from the previous contract, but
right.
So that might be something else we need there.
It's still there, and the water operator appropriately should fall either under the purview or be the property manager. And in the current water operator's position, the contract that we have with Jeff right now, they're actually it specifies they report and coordinate with the property manager, and they do tasks and they do testing as assigned by the property manager. So if we can get cost savings to make that one person, that's great. We do. It would be great if it would be somebody who lives up on the ranch. I don't think that, again, this is a skill set that requires maintaining certifications. It requires a level of competency, which can easily be learned. But it's just something we have to be careful about, because you know, just taking tests can, if you take the tests incorrectly, you can get negative or positive total coliform results. And so we need a skill set. If someone else wants to do it, not Kurt, I don't really care. We just need somebody up there who does it. And if that's something that you're interested in doing, I think that's a discussion we can have at some time.
Well, no, I think what she was getting at was if they're two distinct different positions, and if for some reason Kurt decided not to continue being caretaker, is he still going to be water operator, or they're both commingled?
But this comes back to all those position discussions, right? So maybe we just need to
have a position discussion right now. Right now, we need to find somebody to do the work. If there's someone who's a certified water operator that's willing to take over Jeff's position, please apply when we put out a notice for it. Right now, we don't have anybody. We're going to need somebody, but you're going to have to be a certified water operator.
And that certification only occurs twice a year. The next one is in February.
Yeah, next one's in February. Regional Water or Rural Water Association of Utah does that training, and in this February, March, it's here in St. George. Later on in the year, it's going to be up north. So if it's something you want to do, that's where you get your certification.
Yeah. No, that wasn't the point of the question. The point of the question was historical, right? So
understood.
When Phil and Rachel left, they took the water certificate with them. We're just going back.
I mean, that's the whole problem with it. The whole problem with when you have to have a credential for a position, it's tied up with the individual, and it can be with the ranch manager. It could be a qualification of the land, a requirement of however we do it. It's going to be an individual that's to come with those skills, or it can be, or it's a requirement of the ranch manager upon assumption of the duties. They need to become a certified water operator within a 6 or 12 month time period. We can make that specification. We're a transient non-community water system. So we're almost the lowest threshold of systems, so we've got some flexibility there. Our desire to have a certified water operator is because we want competency there. We want to make sure the water we're providing to our guests is high quality water. And the best way to do it is to have a credentialed person testing the system.
I heard a rumor that Jeff had come up with, not this Jeff, the other Jeff, that if we stopped charging for hauling water, you don't need a certified water operator, because it doesn't need to be a certified system.
Does anybody know that?
Could you please, you came in broken. I only heard a rumor. I didn't hear anything else.
Oh, she said she had heard a rumor that if we stop charging for water hauling off of the headquarters system, that we don't need to have a certified water operator.
Because it's not a certified.
That's inaccurate.
That's inaccurate.
Yeah, that's not correct. Really, whether we charge or not, because we have we allow water hauling and we have a J station, that pushes us into a public water system category, whether we had the 15 connections or not. So, no, there's no truth to that rumor.
So the charging for it or not charging for it doesn't make any difference.
It's a use thing. It's not a fee thing, which triggers becoming a public water system.
Okay. Well, thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah, no worries. Any other questions?
Okay, thanks, Bart. And I echo Vance's adoration of you. I'm amazed that you've done as much as you've been able to do, and you've done a far better job than I can do because you speak better bureaucrat than I do.
Yeah, I'm not boots on the ground like you, though. Thank you for what you do.
Okay. All right. Michael, I don't know if you want to get – do you have anything?
Nothing here.
You want to go over the budget again just for fun?
Nope.
All right. Okay, Scott?
I don't have anything more other than I do want to thank Michael for all the time he's put into this budget. I mean, it's we don't realize how much time it takes, but I want to thank him and thank Bart also for all the time he's put into the water system. That's all I have. You too.
Thanks, Scott.
Dan Wirth here. I think we should nominate Michael Jorgensen to be treasurer for life.
That was a commitment. That's the commitment I got out of him when I talked him into running for the board a year ago. So he's stuck.
Yeah. Never let anybody know you can do gazintas. All right, Cade.
So real quick, try and keep this short. So Larry and I met, just kind of discussed some of the plans for the road. It doesn't look like there's a lot of budget left to try and finish any too much this year. Larry is going to try and do what he can, weather permitting, and we'll give you some updates on that. Larry, I don't think there's been any road work or anything that we've been able to do at this point in time. Is that a correct statement?
Correct.
Okay.
That's not completely correct. I've been working, and I don't know the name of the road. Somebody else could probably tell me, over that leads to Tim and Michelle's place and Lyndon Bisline and up past Bob Hedman. What's the name of that road?
Quarter Horse Lane.
Quarter Horse Lane. So because I've been over there working for Tim and Michelle the majority of my work the past couple of weeks, in and out of that, on Quarter Horse Lane, there was some water damage and erosion, and one culvert that was abandoned when a couple of new, larger culverts were put in maybe a year or two ago by Brad Pierce. The old culvert was just left. I went ahead and dug that out and flushed it out, cleaned it out, and reinstalled it in a new location. So I have done a little bit of work on Quarter Horse Lane. Hauled a couple of loads of road base to take care of the erosions. I do plan to haul a little bit on Meadow Canyon below, between the gravel pit and Broad Hollow. But it's just going to be kind of a matter of as time and weather permits and allows. I'll get with you, Kate, on some other, you know, little things as they come up.
And then we'd also talked maybe having time to do a little bit with the cinders on slide, but I don't know if that's going to get done this year.
Really just depends on how soon we get buried.
No flying. Yeah. Okay. So those are some of the projects that we're kind of talking about. I'm still working to document all the roads, and hopefully by next meeting we'll be able to present that, along with I want to provide a way to report issues with the roads. So I'll commit to that for next meeting if we have time on the agenda, but that would keep me busy for that. I did reach out or did some more investigation on Dan's questions about selling the property, and right now I'm kind of got the same interpretation that you do, Dan, that common areas is a totally different story than individual lots and or other property, but I'm still working. I couldn't get a hold of I've been busy with work all week, and I tried to call the Division of Real Estate on Friday, and they were closed for the holiday. So I will continue to get that answer for you, and we'll proceed with that. I am still, and I need to get the names from the people that volunteered in the last meeting to help out with the bylaws. And I would like people to start looking at the laws and regulations and our existing bylaws so that they can start coming up with a recommendation, then we'll start meeting on that process. So those are the main items there. But I don't know, Scott, Danielle, if you guys took down those names from the last meeting and could send them over to me. I've got one individual, and I know Dan reached out, but any of the other names that raised their hand,
we'll probably post something there too. It was Jeff and Tina Collins, and Dan Wirt was the ones that volunteered to be on
the raised their hand. Okay, I've got one other that was there and raised his hand, too, and I've got his name, so we should be good. But I'll post that on Facebook, too, to see if we get any other individuals. We don't want the group too big, necessarily, but we do want to have input from the interested party, so I'll work to get that going. And those are all my updates, unless anybody's got questions for me.
Hey, Cade, this is Bart. Were you ever able to get a map of all the culverts?
I have not. I'll have to try and get with Jeff again. He tried to give me access to what he did in the trying to remember the USGIS. Yeah, the GIS stuff. And he wasn't able to grant me access, but I'll try and follow up with him again and see if I can get access to that.
Yeah, because I think he tried it. I couldn't get into it either. And so I just think we want to make sure we get those shape files.
Get them to us, yep.
Okay. Yeah, and then if he gets them to us, then I can actually mess with them as well or put them in a map that's shareable.
Okay.
If we can do that.
Okay, I'll see if I can get the files from him. We'll go from there.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. Are we okay? We're now to the open forum for members. So you're supposed to get 2 or 3 minutes each. I might just have to cut you off after one. But anyway, anybody got anything to bring up?
Yeah, Dan Ward here again, and I think I can keep it at one or under. I would just like to. Clarify my previous input. I strongly believe that before any talk, before there is any move towards increasing dues, that the process should always be to investigate volunteerism as a solution and to investigate the sale of the 4 lots owned by DSROA, platted lots, to do things like that we couldn't do otherwise without massive dues increases, things like the reserve fund, roads, and neighborhood water development. So I think that was under a minute.
Okay. Well, you should know how cheap I am, and I'm willing to investigate anything that doesn't cost me more money.
Well, you're not cheap with your volunteerism.
Okay. All right. Tina, you look like you have something to say. She doesn't? Well, that's a first.
Well,
all right, I can't see.
Going on the dues thing, the salary that I would be volunteering for, we could reduce all of our HOA dues.
Right. I don't see any. I can't think of a reason why we should not accept Tina's offer to volunteer to do reservations.
I don't care who volunteers, as long as the money is bringing back to the ranch. I don't care if I do it or somebody else does it, as long as it's an unpaid position.
Okay, here's Brent's take on things.
You've got
we've
less
talked,
than a minute.
We've talked about this, and we're going to put things out for bid. If anybody can underbid you. If somebody wants to pay to do the job, you'll be underbid. So that's just Brent's take. Anybody else?
Yes, Joe, 107. I was wondering, as far as roads go, I helped pay for some of the old burn road to be graveled. That was about 5 years ago. The gravel things to go with the ditches. It'd be possible to put a blade on it and bring it back up. Don't need more gravel. Just need a blade to straighten it out.
Cade?
That's it.
Was that Joe?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Joe,
we'll definitely put it on the list of stuff right now. They've cut my budget next to nothing, but we'll see what we can do and try and get that prioritized. So, Larry, I don't know if you have any feedback on that.
I'm not looking for more gravel, only a blade.
We'll see if we can sneak something over that way.
Well, we might be able to coordinate with our overworked ranch manager too, but we'll talk, and I'll talk with Larry and see what the recommendation is and see what we can do. I'll put it on the list, Joe, because we are going to start building a prioritized list of requests like that. So I'll definitely note it, and we'll take it as something that needs to be looked at least, right?
Okay. Anything else from anybody? All right. Danielle, are you still on?
I am here.
Okay. We're skipping, I take it by your agenda, we're skipping the December meeting, so we're going to January?
I was just following past year's kind of how it's been done. We usually don't have one in December because usually the November one takes up.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You did talk about needing to give the members time for a members meeting for the budget.
Yeah. I think we've got enough to do that we don't necessarily need to cancel a board meeting even, but then we've also got that discussion around the members meeting. That's my personal opinion. I'm almost to the point of we're getting so much piled up on our plates that it seems like we might actually need more meetings, which I hate more meetings, but I don't know. There's a lot to discuss.
Oh, okay. Why don't we do this? Why don't we put our heads together and decide, you know, figure out how much it's going to take and then set a time. And that most people are able to meet. Via Zoom, I guess, and go from there. If there's something that we need to definitely get cleared up before the end of the year, rather than just set a date right now, we could go down.
Just be kind of tentatively looking towards the normal time frame would have been December 9th, the second Saturday of December.
I'm almost to the point of, why don't we put just a tentative meeting board/member, I mean, maybe we can make them combine them or something, you know, do 10 minutes or 15 minutes just to notify the people of the board or of the budget and make sure that they had a chance to view that and there's no complaints, and then move on into a board meeting after that. And we can decide what our agenda is going to be, long or short as we think the agenda will be, but I'm just feeling like there's a lot of position discussions and other things that need to be done. You know, if we're going to create positions or, I don't know. And again, I don't know if that needs to handle an executive meeting or the other, because it's kind of that gray area, but.
Well, I would want to reiterate that the broad topics discussed in executive meetings should be recorded in the minutes. But one thing I'm not understanding is, are you saying that a member meeting is necessary to approve the budget?
Not necessarily to approve it. The process that's, again, by statute and per our CC&Rs, so the statute says we have to do an annual budget, and it has to be adopted by the board, and then it has to be communicated in a meeting of the members to the members, not by email, not by other stuff that way. It has to be communicated to them. They then have a period to reject the budget.
Has that been done in the past? Not to my recollection.
Well, regardless of whether it's been done in the past or not, we've got a legal obligation to do it. And I know you don't feel we need to follow all the legal rules, but for my protection, I want to follow the rules wherever we can.
Because a member meeting has specific requirements.
Correct. You've got to have a 10-day notice and different things that way.
That's
basically
right.
What we've done today.
We didn't give a 10-day notice is the problem, Scott. We only gave 48 hours.
They knew that this was the budget meeting coming up from last week, last month.
It was. They've had a 30-day notice.
They had 30-day notice on this.
I think a member meeting has very specific requirements and implications. Technically, I think that anything that needs to be decided by a meeting of the membership should follow the same rules as the annual meeting of the membership. You know, sending out notifications and basically ballots. So
Dan, there's a little difference. It's not a votable item for the members. The members just have to be notified in a meeting, and then they, if 51 people want to object to what was adopted, or 51%, they physically have to take the action themselves to reject it. There's not a requirement for a vote or anything along those lines. They have to take the action to say we don't approve what was proposed. So.
Well, that is a vote, and what really concerns me is, you know, I've been around for longer than several of the current board members, and I know that this special meeting thing has been abused in the past, so if you're going to have a meeting of the membership. It should be a meeting of the membership.
And that's what I'm proposing is a meeting of the membership in December. It can be a short meeting, but it needs to follow the correct notifications. I'll look again, but I'm not seeing a requirement for a vote, you know, 50% or whatever. That would be a pain if we need to do that. But we can discuss that. But
I don't believe it is a specific meeting of the members. A board meeting is open to all members, therefore it is a meeting of the members.
No, they're two distinct different things, Larry.
They're two different things.
I agree. A meeting of the members is a different thing, but the requirement for passing the budget does not call a specific meeting of the members.
It actually says meeting of the members.
That's the current issue right now. That has not been done in the past. But if Cade's saying to go by the law, then it would require a special meeting of the membership.
Now, per both the bylaws and per the law, it says a meeting of the members. Our bylaws do state that sending out an email for the bylaws, sending out an email is the notice. So I think that's what they've gone by in the past, is that the bylaws say that sending out an email to the members meets that requirement. But I'm not seeing anything in the law that says that you can send out an email to meet the requirement of a meeting of the members. And the law is specifically I'll link it in real quick. The law is specifically requiring a meeting of the members. So I'm putting the link in right now into the chat so you guys can look at it, the wording and stuff there. But
a meeting of the members is a meeting of the members.
Yep.
We have a meeting of the members every year at the annual meeting.
But that's too late to have them look at it. I mean,
No. Let me finish.
Okay, sorry.
And you can have a special meeting of the members. And my position is that if you have a special meeting, we should be very, very careful about proper notification. And as far as I'm concerned, proper notification means by mail, by snail mail, not by email. Now, I'm not sure we have to follow the exact rule here, whether it's even if it's a rule that's specified in Utah law. I think that this is one thing that the board should be capable of deciding without anything more than whoever members are present during the board meeting. But you shouldn't call it a special meeting of the membership. It's a board meeting, and board meetings are different than meetings of the membership.
So just to clarify, you're saying this meeting we're holding today is a board meeting, right?
And That is absolutely correct. It is not a meeting of the membership. It's a meeting, I'm glad that the philosophy here is that members have a great opportunity to contribute to board meetings. That's how it should be. But it is not a meeting of the membership. It's a meeting of the board in which members are encouraged and welcome to participate, just like I'm doing right now.
So I feel we've met this, Cade, by two things, three things. Cade, we announced at the last board meeting that this board meeting today, right now, would be the annual budget meeting, and that would be the focus. So they've had 30-day notice. We've adopted a budget that will now be emailed as an announcement to all members, and they have that 15-day or 30-day, I can't remember what it is, to say we hate this and garner 51% of the 300-member vote to override it and say, no, you guys need to go back to the drawing board and do it again. That's on the members at this point. Once we email out the budget that we've adopted, that's on the members to come back and say, no, you guys got it all wrong. So I think we've met all of this criteria, but I'm not a legal person.
When did we get the budget? When was that sent out? 15 days ago? Is that what you said, Michael?
No, the budget was sent out 2 days ago.
The budget itself was sent out 2 days ago, but that was a proposed. Now we have an adopted budget. That budget will go back out in email as what we adopted at this board meeting. At least that's what I recall them doing in the past, is here's next year's budget.
That's what's in the bylaws, but our bylaws don't match state law. So if we're following the bylaws, you are absolutely correct, Michael. That's what the bylaws currently state. And maybe we do that again this year because that's what's been done traditionally, and I'm totally fine with that. I just want to bring up the fact that if you look at the link in the chat currently says after it's adopted, then we have a meeting of the members. So, again, different than a board meeting. And in that meeting that's presented, then they have 45 days from that meeting. So
in some cases, what I've read with state law versus bylaw, if there is a bylaw addressing this specific item, the bylaw supersedes the state law.
No, so the way that it works is the state law takes precedence and supersedes any of the bylaws. The bylaws can add to, but they can't take away from the requirement of the state.
Understand. Thank you.
Yeah, that's correct.
So.
Understand. Thank you.
Okay. All right. This is the discussion for another time, I think. But so we're going to have are we planning to have a board meeting in December?
I think irregardless, we need to have a board meeting, and we can discuss whether or not we also have a member meeting at the same time. But I think we should have a board meeting in December.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we have a board meeting in December if we want to vote on it. Or do we just do it?
Well, I second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye. Aye.
Okay. All right. So December 9th?
Yes, December 9th.
At 10 a.m. at a Zoom? Is that what we... Because we don't know what the weather will be? Okay.
So are we going to get a Zoom invitation for December 9th by email? Because I depend on that notice.
Yes. Yes, you will get that, Dan.
All right.
That, just like we've done always in the past, the Wednesday before, we'll send out the email with the P&L and whatever information we deem required for the meeting and the Zoom link and all of that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Was everyone in agreement that we adjourn?
Yes.
Who seconded that motion?
Yes, and thank you guys so much.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Nay.
Do you want to revolt, Larry?
All right, stay on here. Thanks, everyone. You guys, I'll leave. I'm staying.
Thanks, everyone, for your participation.